Ooh, that's really springy. The Transportation Policy and Finance Committee will please come to order. Given that we have so many testifiers today, I've spoken with Representative Leader, and we've decided that only one from each side will be allowed to testify. And if you'd all get in line to draw straws. I would ask Representative Hortman to move the minutes for February 12th.
So moved.
Is there any discussion about the minutes? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes for February 12th are adopted. So we're going to be taking... What? Okay. We really do have a crowded schedule here. We're not breaking for dinner, and we're going to try and get out of here by 6. So everybody will have to be brief, or else I'll have to get my big gavel out. Approval of the minutes, we've taken care of that. Public testimony for House File 2800, which is the Transportation Finance Omnibus Bill. We have two folks from ASME Council 5, Judy Blyle and Bill Hilker. Hilker?
It's actually Bob Hilker.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hobart.
I've reviewed the materials that have been passed out so far today, and yesterday I asked for a run of the rate of gas tax over the next 10 years that results in the revenues, and I don't see that, so if it's somewhere right now.
Oh, it's being run off right now.
Okay.
The elves are working on it.
All right, thank you.
Who's first?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for ASME Council 5, and with me today is Bob Hilliker, who is State Field Services Director for ASME Council 5, and I'll turn it over to him for a brief statement, but on behalf of ASME, we appreciate the opportunity to testify, and we urge your fast passage of this bill, which we appreciate you working on today.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you, members, Mr. Chairman. Just a little background. I think last year we were here, myself, Elliot Side.
Identify yourself to the team.
Well, I'm Bob Hilliker.
Thank you.
State Field Director, ASME Council 5. Last year we were before your committee. We did a little PowerPoint discussing our concerns and what we believe the needs were at the Department of Transportation. We talked about the fact that our members were not able to do the job they needed to do. We talked about the fact that they didn't have enough employees to do the inspections that they needed to do. We talked about the fact they didn't have enough employees to do the snowplow needed to do. And we also talked about our concerns for the construction program that we weren't able to deliver the services we needed to there, and that was shrinking. The bill that you have before you, I've had an opportunity to read it. I believe it addresses all the issues and concerns that just about everybody has in the state of Minnesota. I believe it's what's correct and what should be done for the safety of the motoring public. The roads, I think most of you can understand and have driven on the roads out there, that they're falling apart and they need repair, they need reconstruction. You know, our members are doing everything they can to keep the roads in the best condition they can. Obviously, we also represent the inspectors, the designers, the surveyors at MnDOT. We represent 2,700 employees there, and they're concerned and they believe that we need it now in the future have a stable funding mechanism for the Department of Transportation. I've represented the folks in that department for 29 years now, and I've seen the changes over those years. What's happened, at one time we used to have 3,500 employees I represented. Now it's down to 2,650, somewhere in that number. I've seen the change in how the delivery of services is going on. I've seen the conditions of the roads deteriorate. And the department itself has had trouble stabilizing how they're going to propose or move forward with their delivery program. I know they have a 5-year, 20-year plan on the roads. I don't believe they really have enough money, myself personally, to deliver a 10-month plan on the roads and what needs to be done. I believe this bill before you deals with everything, both stabilizing for now and in the future. What needs to be done, I think it also addresses the bridge concerns that people have and those sorts of things. So, you know, I would urge a quick passage of this bill as soon as possible so we can get working on the roads, get them rebuilt, reconstructed, get them repaired, and get the public moving again. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any, we're not going to go to questions here. I think we'll just go to testimony if we can and worry about questions later, if at all.
Thank you.
You might as well get lined up here, get ready to go. This is Margaret Donahoe of the Transportation Alliance is next.
Thank you. This is a big policy?
Yes.
Well,
welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Transportation Alliance, and judging from the size of the gavel, I will be brief. thank you for this opportunity. As you all know, the Transportation Alliance represents the transportation businesses in the state, labor unions, environmental groups, transit organizations, local governments, and a lot of different groups that work on building, maintaining, and operating the transportation system in Minnesota. We appreciate the work of the committee in putting this bill together. We strongly support the bill that's before you and urge you to vote yes on this bill. Of course, this is an issue of jobs, and that's an important issue for Minnesota. Nationally, we know that transportation construction is a $160 billion per year U.S. industry employing 2.2 million Americans. Every $1 billion invested in transportation infrastructure generates more than $2 billion in economic activity throughout the economy. This bill is substantial enough to make significant improvements in roads, bridges, and transit systems around the state. Continuing to deal with our transportation problems through a piecemeal or incremental approach is simply not working. We have a backlog of needed projects for which there is no identified funding of over $25 billion in MnDOT's 20-year plan. In addition, of course, there are unmet needs on the local system and transit systems, adding up to about $1.8 billion per year in unmet needs. There's been a lot of talk about different funding packages for transportation and whether or not they're too big. We would say that they're certainly not big enough to deal with this problem. This bill relies on user fees, which is a fair system for funding transportation. Those who use the system pay for the system. A 5-cent increase in the gas tax would cost the average driver, who drives about 15,000 miles a year, and if they have a vehicle that gets 15 miles per gallon, it's about $50 a year, or less than 14 cents per day. A metro sales tax would add another $70 per year for the average family, and possibly another $100 for higher annual license tab fees if people purchase a different vehicle. The growing problems on our transportation system are becoming a bigger problem for lots of organizations around the state. Every year, the Alliance works with more and more organizations whose members are impacted by the problems on our transportation system, from agricultural groups to senior groups to environmental groups to even healthcare organizations. More and more sectors of our society are getting involved in the need to increase our investment in our transportation system. People all across the state recognize that our transportation problems are costing people real money every day. Every year, the construction costs go up on these projects, and other states do a better job of competing for federal funds. This is the year that we need to have a strong transportation funding bill enacted into law, and we urge your support for this bill. Thank you.
If you have written testimony, it would be nice to deposit it with Susie. Thank you. Mark Stephenson. Mayor of Maple Grove. Welcome to the committee. We're going to do the best we can to keep this each around 3 minutes, so appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the division. For the record, I am Mark Stephenson, the mayor of Maple Grove. I'm also president of the North Metro Mayors Association, and our message today is a very simple one: resolve the impasse and increase transportation funding. The ongoing strangulation of our transportation system must stop this legislative session. You have all heard reports of the tragedies of traffic deaths and personal injuries. Congestion is simply taking away our personal time with our families. Congestion generates pollution that destroys our health. Congestion drives up the cost of doing business and eats away at our ability to compete in a world economy. The evidence is all around us, and we have to solve the problem. The shortage of transportation funds has pushed completion of Highway 610 in Maple Grove far into the future. The Devil's Triangle Interchange Reconstruction Project in Brooklyn Park and Osseo, featured in today's Star and Tribune, has been delayed once again and appears to be probably featured in further delays in the future. Planning studies for future projects have been delayed or simply stopped. They've left these projects in limbo, and they leave our cities and our businesses in limbo as well. City development rests upon the ability to get these new highway projects completed, and state revenues are tied to them as well. To those who say we cannot afford to raise taxes and user fees to address the funding crisis facing our state, county and local road system, as well as our metro and greater Minnesota transit needs, we say simply, we cannot afford not to invest more money. We all know the costs of doing business are inflated by congestion and other road problems. Our business people tell us that it costs them a dollar per minute that they are delayed in traffic. We all know that those costs are currently being absorbed by all the citizens of Minnesota through property taxes, higher costs for goods and services, and other indirect means. We should understand that we can save money by investing more, and that we need to do so immediately. Bottom line, we all know we need to invest in our transportation system in Minnesota. We must do more than just slow the rate of decline of that system. We need to reverse course and start making significant improvements. Your funding proposal announced yesterday is an excellent step forward. We understand, and we need a legislative approval this year. But to the extent so this bill reaches any difficulty with the governor, we would certainly continue to encourage you to work together as a body and with the governor to get legislation passed. We simply cannot afford to have another year pass without a transportation bill. The economy of the state needs that help, and we look to you to make sure that that happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Jason Flores, Twin West Chamber. Please get in somewhere near the podium so we can keep rolling here. Whoever's next, Aaron Sexton. Oh, Buffett. Oh, my goodness.
Mr. Chair, it's all right with you if I go first?
Sure.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Erin Sexton, and I am the Director of Transportation Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Our transportation is a critical issue for our membership. Our members are users of the system, and they recognize that it's important for businesses to move freight and other goods efficiently and safely, and for employees to get to work in a timely and safe manner. They also recognize that these improvements come with a price. They just want the price to be a reasonable one. For these reasons, we support a common sense and balanced package containing a 5-cent gas tax, a 2.5-cent debt service surcharge for bonding to accelerate projects, increased license tax fees, dedication of the MVEST on lease vehicles, general obligation bonding for local bridges, dedicated funding for transit of up to $100 million per year until year 2020, a congestion pricing on new capacity or existing HOV lanes to relieve congestion. And we'd also like to work with the Department of Transportation and the Met Council to see if there's opportunities for us to identify efficiencies within those agencies. And I like to preface that by saying it's not to suggest that they're inflated or not doing things to the best of their ability, but are there things that we can look at or suggestions we can bring from a business community perspective to help improve efficiencies at those agencies? We think this package represents significant movement from our position last session, with the addition of a 2.5 cent debt service surcharge and $100 million per year to advance transit projects. Based on today's economy, it is clearly a stretch proposal, and we know that many advocates will not think this is enough. We understand that this package will not solve all of our transportation problems, but it will help fix our roads and build some transit in the metro area, while being sensitive to the price tag. It will demonstrate real progress for the public and increase the confidence that new state investments do make a difference in their lives. While we share the desire for increased funding, and I think there are many consistencies with our proposal and the bill that's on the table today, we do disagree with the inclusion of a half-cent sales tax in the metro area. According to the Department of Revenue, businesses pay 45% of our state sales tax, and that equates to about $100 million business tax increase each year. We generally do oppose the increase in dedication of our sales tax dollars, but we have said if it is necessary to meet that $100 million need, we hope that it would be done at the lowest rate possible. And as you all know, the half cent does raise $200 million. And we'd also prefer not to see it create a new bureaucracy to administer the dollars. We'd prefer it to be with a voter referendum, and we would like to see it sunset in the year 2020. We do have traditional user fees to fund our roads and bridges, and we should not turn to the sales tax to fund our roads and bridges as part of this package. In addition, we do not support indexing the gas tax to inflation. We strongly believe that elected officials should vote to increase taxes, not automatically adjust for inflation. The Chamber strongly supports additional investment in our transportation infrastructure, and we are hopeful that we can make progress on this issue this year. We hope that we can put forward a common and balanced package that keeps in mind our state's economy. And we have worked with a number of our local Chamber Federation partners on this proposal. We've spent a lot of time with our members, and we think and hope that it is possible to put forward a package that we can all agree on.
Did you get the answer to that question about over a million people, a referendum is not necessary?
Yes, and I will seek greater clarification on that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Jason Flores. I'm Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. I'm also here today representing the Metropolitan Coalition of Chambers, which is 25 chambers of commerce throughout the metro area, and over 60 communities in the metro area. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill today, talk about some of the areas of that we do support, as well as some areas of concern. And I will be brief, given that many of these concerns are very similar to those just expressed by the Minnesota Chamber. In fact, Twin West and MCC, and our members, our business members, played a very large role in development of the Minnesota Chamber's position, and we very much support it and hope to find some kind of consensus and a middle ground to move forward with transportation funding. An efficient, accessible, and reliable transportation system is crucial to the success of our member businesses. The state's economy and our business's bottom line depends on our ability to move people and goods. Currently, our roads, bridges, and transit systems are in dire need of upgrades and repairs, both from a capacity standpoint as well as from a safety standpoint. And for that reason, many of the provisions included in this bill are ones that we would support, including the 7.5 cent increase in the gas tax, the bonding proposals, the TASB increases, as well as finding some form of investment in transit. Transit is critical to the future health of transportation in the metro area. We've identified about a $100 million need that we would like to see filled. That being said, we also share some of the same concerns already expressed with indexing of the gas tax, with the size of the sales tax, which is a significant business tax. And while I understand that details are still being worked out on the implementation of that sales tax, we do want to keep as streamlined and coordinated the transportation system in the metro as possible without dividing it up too much. With those small concerns and some others already highlighted by Ms. Sexton, we look forward to working with members of the committee on this bill and hope that we can find a balanced middle ground that can be passed into law this year. Thank you.
Did you say you represent the St. Paul Chamber and that in the coalition?
The St. Paul Chamber is one member of the Metropolitan Coalition of Chambers, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Art Stanglin, Hennepin County Commissioner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mark Stanglin, and I'm a Hennepin County Commissioner representing the 2nd District of Hennepin County. I'm joined here at the podium with Reed LeBeau, who's going to run the slideshow, hopefully. I want to take this opportunity at first to thank you for your efforts in putting together a transportation package that will help the citizens of Minnesota. And my particular interest today is the Lowry Avenue Bridge, a stretch that I think I've dragged most of you across at least once in the last couple of years. The Lowry Avenue Bridge, as many of you know, is a connector between east and west, north Minneapolis and north and east Minneapolis, along County State 8 Highway number 153. The original bridge was constructed in 1905, and the piers are still being used today from those 1905 piers. It was totally reconstructed in 1958, but using the same foundation. The bridge condition is considered a fracture critical bridge and structurally deficient, has a sufficiency rating of 43. It should be noted this I-35W bridge has a sufficiency rating of 50. The Lowry Avenue Bridge is indeed a busy structure. It handles over 15,000 vehicles a day, and many of those vehicles are not only cars but they're heavy cement trucks and semis. Since the CP Rail Depot is right north of Lowry Avenue, and it's a container terminal, and many of the trucks use Lowry Avenue to get over to 94 in order to go and distribute their containers and their commas throughout the area. As you can see on the slide, there's the bridge is a truss bridge, above grade truss bridge, and it's gotten old. Well, it is old. It's over 50 years old. And in our time of doing the regular maintenance, that's not how the bridge looks today. That's how it looked 100 years ago. But that's an idea of where we're at. In the time that the county has been maintaining and painting and maintaining the bridges, we found 5 years ago while we were doing our routine maintenance that one of the piers had slipped. And in fact, it's tilting 11 inches off center. If you back up one, Reed, you can see where the bearings of the bridge are starting to slip off the center point. I think if you want to go forward. There we go. That's not how it's supposed to look. They're supposed to line up, and what's happening is that pier is actually shifting. It's shifting to the east, causing that to almost fall off of its bearing. And so as a result, they shored up the bottom, and they're watching that pier right now. We're keeping the bridge open, but it's monitored monthly. As you know, this has been on our top priority for bonding for the last 3 years, and it's reaching the point now where we're not sure how long we're going to be able to keep this structure operating. So we're in dire need of help. The entire project is going to be in excess of $100 million, and we're requesting a little over $24 million from the state. Of Minnesota for help on that, and we're going to go elsewhere for the remaining balances. As you can see, the various industries that line the river by the bridge and are vital, that bridge is a vital connector between the two sides of the river, not only for the commerce in the area, but also for public safety. Fire station on each side of the river serves both sides of the river through Minneapolis. In fact, Minneapolis has a utility conduit in addition to a huge water main that crosses the river at that bridge. So the bridge is clearly a vital link between both sides of Minneapolis. And as you can see from the picture up there now, the bridge extends over to the west and comes over a train trestle track that needs to be replaced. So the real project here is not only the bridge, but also that section to the west where the CP line goes underneath it, along with all that heavy industry. So, Mr. Chair, I know you're pressed for time today. I would be happy to stand for questions.
Well, I think not.
All right.
But thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Very nice presentation. Next is Peter McLaughlin. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, he's on his way, so...
All right, we'll go to Jan Callison, Mayor of Minnetonka. Please identify yourself to the tape.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Jan Callison. I'm the Mayor of Minnetonka. and here today in my capacity as president of the Municipal Legislative Commission. The MLC was formed in 1984 and now provides a voice for the more than 720,000 residents and over 485,000 employees who work in our 14 suburban communities. I am also the vice president and a board member of Metro Cities, which represents 86 cities in the metro area. Thank you, Chairleader, for your hard work and leadership. The need to pass a comprehensive and balanced transportation finance bill is urgent. Thank you also to the committee members whose time commitment and thoughtful negotiations have moved us towards a solution to the transportation funding emergency in our state. It is my sincere hope that the bill before you today will garner the necessary support in both legislative bodies and with the administration to become law. It is clear that you have been listening to the concerns of all stakeholders in this discussion. Our local communities thank you for your understanding of the nexus between state action and local property taxes. The property tax constitutes the foundation of local city revenue and needs to continue to be a stable source of local funding into the future. When demands rise but other sources of revenue do not, we have little choice but to consider higher property taxes. Nowhere is that clearer than in transportation funding. The state's inadequate financing of transportation needs has forced property taxes to rise. The demands upon our roads, highways, and transportation infrastructure have increased, but our resources have not. Cities are being asked to provide upfront funds for state projects because state resources are inadequate. The municipal share of county road projects continues to rise. Local streets need improving, but our portion of gas tax revenue is flat. Virtually every MLC or Metro Cities community could share a story with you of the impact of inadequate transportation funding on property taxes. Some communities, like mine, can also tell tales of inadequate transportation funding stifling business expansion. Given the local investments we have been forced to make in order to keep our communities safe and efficient, many of our communities will welcome the passage of this comprehensive transportation bill, which includes revenue-raising options to meet regional and state highway, bridge, and transit needs as a form of property tax relief. I want to thank Chairleader and Representative Hornstein specifically for their leadership in including a metro area sales tax in this bill. The legislation is the culmination of negotiation and compromise by the metro area cities and counties, and we thank the Metropolitan Council for their compromise on the governance structure. Investment in our transportation infrastructure is critical to economic vitality as well as a quality of life issue in the seven-county metropolitan area. We appreciate the legislature's bold step in including this piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. We also support the study on the viability of the value capturing along transit corridors. This is a progressive approach to financing the operating costs of transit ways, and we welcome it. Finally, we have some questions about the local road improvement program and look forward to working with committee members to address them. On behalf of the Municipal Legislative Commission and Metro Cities, thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you, Mayor. John Osladen, Minnesota Truckers Association. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here today to talk to you about this bill. I am John Osladen, president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. Today, you have an opportunity to establish a clear vision and a bright line for the future funding of our transportation system. By adopting the anti-privatization and the anti-tolling provisions of this bill, which we do support, you can lay out a plan that says our existing general purpose lanes will remain free of tolls while at the same time allowing for creative financing for new capacity. And in short, you can send a clear message that citizens will not be forced to pay twice to use the same road. Now, why be concerned about these issues today? Is it before us? Well, as interstate businesses, trucking companies have a unique vantage point. Our trucks drive every road in every state, and we frankly pay every type of transportation tax that exists today. And I can show you the paperwork. And in our travels, we are witnessing a very alarming trend. As other states face transportation funding shortfalls, they are increasingly turning to tolling and privatization to manage their existing roads. In exchange for upfront cash and long-term payments, state and local governments are turning over critical infrastructure to private investors. The issue really is already here in this very bill with the Urban Partnership Agreement. But let me be clear. There are certain instances, such as hot lanes and the elements in the UPA, which we believe alternative financing can play a positive role. In those cases, these so-called pay-as-you-go methods are actually adding new capacity or managing existing capacity in ways that still allow commercial vehicles to use existing routes. However, for our existing road infrastructure, there are strong financial and equity arguments for prohibiting tolls and privatization. And you should have passed out to you, we're calling it our Green Book, an exhaustive study that talks about the advantage of fuel tax over tolls in this way of funding roads. So first, the drawbacks under tolling systems. Frankly, less money goes to the roadbed. The cost just to collect and administer the tolls, this is just to collect and administer, in many states, is between 20% and 40%. In comparison, it typically costs only 2% to 3% to collect state fuel taxes. Toll increases have little accountability or transparency because these decisions are typically removed from the public debate. Case in point, in 1995, a group of seven people raised the toll on the Ohio Turnpike 82% with no public input. Tolls are also inequitable. Imagine a working father of four carpooling in a gas-efficient Ford Focus paying the same amount as a single person driving a Hummer. And frankly, privatization is no better. You will also find an article passed out that talks about how private investment firms are going around the country trying to make the case why this is a good deal for investors. Now, private investors have little accountability to the public. When roads are privatized, tolls inevitably go up, and they go up quickly. This is a good example. The recently privatized Indiana Tollway is jumping from $4.65 to $8 per car. And there's no guarantee that the money will go to roads. Chicago Skyway lease payments are being spent to reduce city debt. And leasing and sales agreements typically include onerous non-compete clauses, limiting improvements on adjacent capacity. Why? To maximize the return to the investor. And at a length of 75 to 90 years, I must ask you, are these really leases? Or are they functionally a sale? Because our grandchildren won't even see the end of those. And lastly, we simply cannot afford to have our road infrastructure, which is critical to our economic vitality and our national security, in the hands of private firms whose motive is not public or national good, but private gain. By adopting this language, prohibiting tolling of existing roadways as part of the transportation funding bill, the state of Minnesota has the opportunity to set some clear vision for future funding. And doing so says that the traditional and cost-effective methods of collecting road funding, the fuel tax, the registration fee, and the motor vehicle sales tax will remain our key funding source. But more importantly, adopting this language sends a clear message to the public that we will not force citizens to pay twice for the same roads. There really is no better time to address this issue than now. And in conclusion, you may be wondering if the NTA supports the bill. Really, the only problem we have with the bill right now is the indexing. Just like in privatization, indexing offers no accountability. However, we do have some ideas on ways to improve the bill to address financing the debt service, because we do agree that that is critical to have that identified. So we look forward to working with the committee to address our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. And if anybody else wants to say anything about tolling, you can cut it down to one sentence now. Thank you. Do you really want to ask a question?
Please.
Representative Housen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you been able to sit down with the people around UPA to actually see the drawings of those lanes to determine whether it's going to work the way you think it's going to work? I mean, this is language, but the workability?
Right, yes. Actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Housen, we've had extensive discussions with MnDOT, Met Council, the folks who are pursuing UPA. And we believe the language does nothing to cause any problems for UPA as it is written, but it does set those bright lines for the future. So, for example, converting an HOV lane to a hot lane under UPA would be acceptable under this, as would be the price dynamic shoulder lane. So it works.
Thank you. Next. Peter McLaughlin has arrived.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Peter McLaughlin. I'm a Hennepin County Commissioner, chair there of the County Rail Authority, and chair of the Metro Transitways Development Board. which is comprised of the seven regional railroad authorities in the metropolitan area operating as a joint powers board. Since 92, we've been a leading advocate for the investment in a safe, reliable, efficient regional transportation system and a statewide transportation system. We applaud the committee's consideration today of a comprehensive statewide transportation plan, a balanced approach between Greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities, between transit and roads. We'll put a focus on safety. It will provide for efficient spending for projects that this state needs. And as always, it will dedicate the gas tax to road projects and road projects only, and transportation revenue to transportation purposes. I want to speak, if I could, Mr. Chairman. I just tell that I've been out in Clay County, Ottertail, McLeod, Meeker, and Scott County in the last week, discussing with my fellow county commissioners their transportation needs. During our conference at AMC in December, Greater Minnesota commissioners looked at some projects here in the metropolitan area, including the Lowry Avenue Bridge. And it's fair to say, as that bus was approaching the Lowry Avenue Bridge that Commissioner Stengline talked about, someone on the bus started saying the rosary for fear that the bridge might go down. So we made it across, and we actually felt so good we came back across again. So, but the message I heard in all of these counties, was that we need a comprehensive transportation package, and that there is no rural-urban split, that the needs are the same for safety, for investment to keep our businesses strong. And in fact, they talked very eloquently at each of these stops about the hidden tax that lack of investment in transportation represents. And that hidden tax takes the form of delay here in the metropolitan area, takes the form of the extra travel time that you have to endure if you've got your roads posted in the springtime for 7 tons and your business has to go 10 miles around to make it to where they need to go. That's a real tax. You're paying the 20-cent gas tax and you're paying the $3 a gallon gasoline during that. They see this across the way, across the state in these counties that I've been to, as an investment in our economic future as a state. And so we urge you to make these investments. I'd like to spend a little time on the half-cent metro sales tax, if I might, Mr. Chairman, which is a key component here. It would be dedicated to roads and transit. 50% to transit, 25% to roads, and 25% would be flexible. The list of projects, the potential qualifying transportation projects for the metro sales tax comes from cities and counties throughout the metropolitan area and identifies pressing transportation needs that exist for highway improvement. That would be how a portion of these revenues would be used. We think that it's important to have this balanced approach between roads and transit, and we hope that the committee will look at this. These are projects that are lying in wait of investment and slowing economic growth in our region. I was in Scott County today, and the commissioners out there have a working relationship with other local governments, and they have they now have a 10-year capital plan. And I encountered in Meeker County, they've got a 7-year capital plan now because the 5-year capital plan doesn't work. That project has been falling off the end of it. And so they're stretching their capital plans out because they want to make sure that there is a vision for their counties. And so the dedicated funding source will allow investment to be made. We're going to also be able to move forward on transit investment in this metropolitan area. And I have to tell you, I just came from the Central Corridor Implementation Committee meeting, and we're going to have to cash flow for Central Corridor $175 million at the tail end before the federal money, the final federal payments come in. We have no mechanism for doing this. And so the dedicated funding source, we'll do that, Mr. Chairman, and I hope that the sales tax can be enacted. It will cure the structural problem that we have here in the metropolitan area. And on governance, counties are used to dealing with joint powers agreements. That's how these funds would be governed. We have an agreement with the Metropolitan Council about how that ought to be done, and so I think we're in good shape to provide guidance in the use of these resources. Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. We're going to keep right on moving to the testifiers, I think. Thank you. Next, we have Tim Werke, Association of General Contractors. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I have some handouts here. I think the page is going to hand out two handouts I'm going to speak from and move through these quickly and let you look at, I'm Tim Warkey from the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. I represent the Associated General Contractors is a trade association of the largest highway construction and general building contractors in the state. We have some 450 members. We are the folks that will build the investments that you're proposing to make in this legislation, and for the record, we are supportive of the legislation. Two handouts being passed around. One I'd like to work from quickly first is the stapled color copy. The purpose of me handing this out, this is a survey that we do of our members annually, and it's a survey of their capacity to perform additional work in the Minnesota construction market. And it's broken down by highway contractors and general building contractors. And as you look through that, you will see that the Minnesota construction industry has significant excess capacity to perform more work in this marketplace. And I say that because when this debate annually has occurred in this legislature for the past 15 to 20 years, the question invariably comes, how can we spend more? We are already spending and constructing so much, there won't be anyone to do any of the work. As you work through that document, you will see that our membership stands ready to perform and deliver on any investments that you would make. If the Minnesota construction market does not expand, many Minnesota contractors and related businesses and their employees will be faced with difficult decisions regarding their future. Contractors need to have some idea of what their future holds to plan for staffing, banking, insurance, equipment, and technology upgrades. Without some idea of what their future holds, some firms will shift their focus to other markets within the region or beyond. Others will elect to enter other industries where skills and resources transfer, and sadly, some firms may close their doors. The greatest threats we face in declining market is the loss of trained skilled workers. At a time when skilled labor is a premium, the loss of these trained skilled laborers to other states or industries would be a measurable economic loss to the Minnesota economy. Mr. Chairman, that finishes my remarks regarding our survey. In the interest of time, I'd like to move, there are no questions on that, to this one-page handout and address for a moment issues involved in the marketplace with respect to inflation in the construction market. As a point of clarity, the producer price index is the market indicator that is used to determine inflation rates in the construction market. And the consumer price index is what we're all used to that tracks and puts a number to durable goods, consumer goods. What you see in those two highlighted phrases on the front of that page, in 2007, the Highway Construction Producer Price Index rose 9.6%, and over the past 4 years, the PPI rose a cumulative 47%. At during the same time period, the Consumer Price Index rose in 2007 a modest 4.1%, and over those same 4 years, 14%. You can clearly see that what's happening in the construction market, the cost of materials is driving prices higher and higher above what's going on in the producer price and or in the consumer price index. And what is causing that? If you turn to this busy table on the back, and you can look at that at your leisure of all of the inputs that go into construction, about a third of the way down the page, it's titled Table 3, Changes in PPI for Specific Construction Inputs. Number 2, diesel fuel, the first entry there. And if you go to the far right of that row, you will see that since December of 2003, diesel fuel, which is the major input of things like asphalt, and the oil that the diesel that drives all the heavy equipment. 177% increase in the market. Those are the kind of things that are going on. The longer we wait to get about the business of passing this legislation, the more it is going to cost. It is that simple. Mr. Chairman, I stand for any questions.
Thank you. But I think we'll keep moving. I appreciate your testimony. And next is Bob Vanasek, Minnesota Intercounty Association.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bob Vanasek, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Intercounty Association. As the legislature convenes for the 2008 session, transportation funding once again looms as a critical issue that needs to be addressed. The list of folks clamoring for relief from congestion, dangerous two-lane roads, inadequate transit service is growing and now includes the business community, county, city, and township governments, labor unions, shippers, farm groups, people who depend on transit, and just about everyone else who has wasted time and money while stuck in traffic. We are approximately 2 months shy of the 20th anniversary of the last time Minnesota made its last significant sustained investment in transportation infrastructure. Unchanged since 1988, the gas tax has seen its buying power diminish greatly due to the effects of inflation, and that problem has been exacerbated by the large debt service burden on the Trunk Highway Fund as a result of past bonding programs. All across Minnesota, property taxes are being increased in order to help partially offset the failure to enact a comprehensive funding package at the state level. Last week, the Mankato Free Press editorial board wrote that the road funding debate in Minnesota isn't about raising taxes. It's about creating a sensible system where the right people are paying the right taxes. The paper goes on to say that the current transportation policies have forced more and more of the cost for state roads on the county and city property taxpayers. We all know that something needs to be done, and it needs to be done this session. MnDOT's own 2006 congestion report illustrates this reality. When significant projects are adequately funded, they can be completed faster, cheaper, and better. I think I'll conclude my remarks just by saying that we would ask you to act favorably on the legislation that's currently before you, and would also point out one concern that we have that was raised before on the local road improvement program. In the past, that program has been available to all regions of the state. It hasn't been restricted to just greater Minnesota. Thank you.
The next, Holly Thompson, Highway 14 Partnership.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Holly Thompson, and I'm the Legislative Associate with the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership. The Highway 14 Partnership consists of 21 local units of government and 55 private businesses located along Highway 14 in the southern part of the state. Many of our members have been here before you testifying for the need for a comprehensive transportation bill to be passed to get closer to a safe four-lane highway from Rochester to New Ulm. As many of you know, Highway 14 is a notoriously deadly highway. Since the mid-1980s, over 140 people have died on Highway 14. From 2000 to 2005, 75% of the fatalities on Highway 14 occurred on the two-lane portions of the road. In a recent Mankato Free Press article, a Cortland City firefighter was quoted as saying, "I am sick of pulling dead people out of ditches. If Highway 14 is one of the most dangerous in the state, why hasn't something been done?" And the answer we all know to that question is lack of funding. At a recent public hearing for the EIS for North Mankato to New Ulm, the public was not necessarily asking what or where, but rather when will we ever see this in our lifetime. The Highway 14 Partnership supports this transportation bill because our members believe it brings us one step closer to a four-lane Highway 14 from Rochester to New Ulm, possibly before 2023. Thank you.
Have you convinced the legislators who live in the Highway 14 area to vote for a transportation funding package this year?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are meeting with them as much as possible.
Thank you.
They will.
That's a good start. Former Representative John Toomer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is John Toomer. I'm here speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership and the 47 member organizations who have signed on to support an efficient and well-designed transportation system that protects our air quality, reduces global warming pollution, and gives Minnesotans plenty of options of how to get around. Member organizations of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership have a combined membership of almost 500,000 Minnesotans who enjoy, want to protect, and to pass on to our future generations our great outdoors. With nearly 1.2 million people coming to this metropolitan area to the state in the next 2 decades, the Minnesota Environmental Partnership has made transportation choices one of its top priorities for the first time in its history for this session, in particular the passage of the half-cent sales tax with a significant portion of it being dedicated to transit choices. Mr. Chairman, and again, Mr. Chairman, we appreciate your willingness to continue to support that in this particular bill. The reasons for that are simple. Transportation is a significant source of global warming pollution. 30% of global warming emissions come from our transportation sector. That's right out of our tailpipes. Increased transit choices are a critical part of reducing global warming emissions in Minnesota. Increased public transit options in the Twin Cities alone will reduce car travel by nearly 1 billion miles by 2020. This reduction in miles traveled translates into 39 million gallons of gas saved by 2020, almost 3 million gallons a year. At current gas prices, that means $1 billion staying in Minnesota's economy as opposed to going to foreign oil. And most importantly to the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, that translates into a reduction of 395,000 tons of global warming pollution by 2020. I'll repeat that number for you, 395,000 tons. We appreciate your willingness as a legislature and also the governor's willingness to pass a nation-leading global warming bill last session. That was a goal to reduce our global warming emissions by 80% by 2050. Goals are nice. I have a goal to run a marathon someday, but until I get out and run mile one, that goal is pretty much meaningless. In your mile one is passage of this bill, along with Representative Hortman's bill, I think, tomorrow in environment, the California Clean Car Standards. Here is a great opportunity for you to take that first step to actually accomplishing that ambitious goal that you set. One of the most productive ways is to pass a well-designed and efficient transportation package that is here in this one, which includes transportation choices. The governor's own task force on global warming pollution said this is an essential step to succeed in reducing our global warming emissions. Therefore, the Minnesota Environmental Partnership and its 500,000 members will call on you to take your duty as stewards of our great outdoors seriously and pass this great package, Mr. Chairman, that you have before you today. It's good for our commuters, it's good for our economy, and most importantly to MEP, it's good for our great outdoors. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Another announcement. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rob Vanosik. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships today. Today and tomorrow is the kind of Township Days at the Capitol. You might have seen it. Some of our 75 folks that are here, that were here in the audience earlier, but have their committee hearings, internal meetings going on right now. But we welcome you to the Township Breakfast tomorrow morning, 6:30 a.m. Mr. Chair, the Minnesota Association of Townships strongly supports this bill. Transportation is a basic function of government. Moving people, goods, and services around the state. The gas tax has not kept up. The Minnesota Township Association of long supported a minimum increase of 7 cents to our current gas tax. A resolution that our executive board passed last night, I'm just going to paraphrase some of it. Whereas townships are responsible for more road miles than any other road authority in the state, and townships are responsible for over 55,000 miles of roads, constituting nearly one-half of the road miles in the state of Minnesota, whereas there are approximately 6,000 bridges on the township road system alone, nearly 700 of which are on the state's deficiency list, 512 of which are on the state's MnDOT's priority deficiency list, which, Mr. Chair, it would cost $90 million, just over $90 million just to repair those 512 priority bridges around the state. Whereas the integrity of Minnesota's transportation infrastructure is dependent on long-term planning and ongoing maintenance, both of which require dedicated and sustainable revenue sources available to all units of the government. And whereas Minnesota leaders have not increased dedicated funding levels for transportation systems to keep pace with growing costs and changing needs, whereas no single source of funding can meet the diverse needs of all road authorities across the state to improve and maintain the necessary transportation structure, therefore be it resolved, this board requests that Minnesota legislature pass a comprehensive and balanced transportation funding package, permanently increasing dedicated funding for transportation, and further requests that Governor Tim Pawlenty allow a comprehensive and balanced transportation funding package, and so on. Township residents directly set their local levies on them each year at the annual town meeting in March. From 2000 to 2006, townships across the state have more than doubled the amount of money that they're levying against their own property taxpayers to pay for roads, bridges, maintenance, construction. We've seen increasing traffic volume, increased vehicle weight, both from farm to trucking to a need to add more lane miles where necessary. Farm to market, recreation, tourism, transport of goods, all takes place on the state township roads around the state. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll thank you and thank the committee members for your time. And again, we do support this comprehensive bill.
Thank you. Carol Lubrow, Association of Minnesota Counties, and Commissioner Myra Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Carol Lubrow, and I'm the policy analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties, does their transportation policy. We want to thank Representative Leader for his leadership on this issue. And at first glance, this bill has the elements of all that AMC has supported in the past. It's long-term, comprehensive, and addresses metro and rural needs as well as highway and transit needs. We're a little disappointed that the wheelage tax was not included and that funding for local bridges isn't what we'd hoped for, but it goes a long way in addressing county needs. The economy of our state is under siege, and investing in the state's infrastructure is in the interest of every citizen. What better way to increase the coffers of the general fund than putting people back to work, people who pay taxes? Whether you're a commuter, a freight hauler, a student, or a citizen waiting for delivery to your residence, every citizen is entitled to a safe and efficient transportation system. Our transportation system is deteriorating at a faster pace than our ability to preserve it. Counties are short $300 million annually in just preserving our current system, let alone being able to afford to expand capacity in growing areas of the state or upgrade our roads to a higher tonnage to accommodate the agricultural areas of the state. Just to make headway in the preservation, Counties have had to increase property taxes because the state has provided little additional revenue in the past 20 years. No one likes paying more taxes, but citizens are paying more taxes through the property tax for transportation than if the gas tax and tab fees had been increased over the recent years. Is it fair for people on fixed incomes in the districts that you represent to subsidize commuters and freight haulers from other counties and other states? This present scenario of funding transportation through higher property taxes is simply unfair and completely disconnected from the actual road usage and local highway system demands. The legislature needs to support a transportation funding bill that provides new revenue through user fees that spread the needed revenue more equitably. The legislature should put this issue to rest after 20 years of partisanship and do what is in the best interest of the state and future generations. Citizens are entitled to safe roads, safe bridges, and alternatives to driving alone. The bill before you appears to do just that and seems consistent with AMC policy, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. For the record, my name is Myra Peterson. I'm Washington County Commissioner, and I'm also Chair of the AMC Transportation Policy Committee. Mr. Chair and members, first, I'd like to thank the members of the committee that drafted this proposal. At first glance, it has most of the elements of the bill that AMC has been able to support in the past. It is a long-term comprehensive, and it addresses metro and rural needs, and as well as highway transit needs. We are disappointed that a wheelage tax was not included. Please allow me to tell you why it's important, and I've used Washington County because I know it best. A wheelage tax goes directly to the county in which it's raised. I have several graphs that I have passed out to you that shows you how counties and cities in Washington County have become dependent on our property tax. If you take a moment and look at it, the graph shows you the property tax on the bottom, the red and white, and if you look, you can tell where the wheelage tax, that's the faded blue, and if you look at the top, that's our county bond issue. You can see that in our county, we become more and more dependent on our property tax. If you go to the next page, this is the city of Woodbury, one of our fastest growing cities. And you will notice here that the gas tax, the MSA fund, is again in red, and the property tax is again shown in blue. This represents Washington County, but this is what's going on throughout the state of Minnesota. We have a $5 million shortfall each year in our transportation budget. This does not include any expansion projects that will allow us to plan and build our county roads to accommodate our new 60,000 residents in the next 20 years. I was elected in 1993. Farmland was being sold for $1,500 to $3,000 per acre. Today it's sold for $175,000 an acre. Not only have land prices gone up, but the cost of building our roads have gone up. Lastly, we have a waiting list of 43 intersections that citizens want stoplights or some major intersection improvements. We are unable to address those. We have to prioritize them. We were also disappointed that funding for local bridges isn't what the governor recommended over the next two-year period, but we were pleased to have $300 million put in for replacement of trunk highway bridges. In 1988, the Metro Council identified bridges that needed to be replaced in the East Metro. We have several bridges in Washington County that were identified. The Stillwater Bridge, the Hastings Bridge, the St. Paul Park Swing Bridge, and the Wakota Bridge. The Swing Bridge was closed because it could not be replaced in its existing location. The Wakota was started, but has yet to be completed. The Stillwater Bridge is scheduled to start in 2024. That bridge has gone from $18 million to $480 million. And the Hastings Bridge is scheduled for 2018. These are four bridges that were identified in 1988 as being some of the worst bridges in the state of Minnesota. The governance issue, we think, has been worked out. When AMC worked together, we worked very hard to find compromises between our rural, suburban, and urban counties. The compromise was made by conservative and liberal commissioners who focused on the needs of our state transportation system. We recognize that a strong transportation system is the key element in our state's economy. And I will stop. I have exceeded my time. But thank you, and I look forward to the committee passing this bill. We think it's the first step, and I stand for questions.
We're going to keep moving on questions another time. The next committee. Joel Ewan, the Multiple Sclerosis Society.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joel Ewan. I'm from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, Minnesota chapter. I represent 9,000 people in Minnesota with multiple sclerosis. I am also the co-chair of the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, a coalition of more than 100 disability organizations. About a third of those organizations are advocacy organizations, and two-thirds are provider organizations. I think it's important to note that in this context because the transportation and transit for people with disabilities is an issue that I hear both from the advocacy organizations and the provider organizations. This is a real issue that we run into because transit is a real lifeline for people with disabilities. It's a lifeline for people with disabilities being able to have access to employment and opportunities and be able to go and have a job. It's also a lifeline so people can go to medical appointments. You know, there's been a lot said at the legislature in recent years about medical assistance transportation. Well, for a lot of people with disabilities and seniors, they aren't enrolled in medical assistance, and so their way that they're depending on to get to medical appointments is through whatever the local transit system may be and however it may exist. And so this is a key part that we are watching for. It's also, for people with disabilities, transit is the key to just having a life, being able to go out and do social events, whatever the case may be. So we are certainly in support of this bill that is put forward. We think that this is a great first step in trying to add additional transit services, both in the metro area and also in greater Minnesota. But frankly, the need is great. There is a lot of pent-up demand that is out there for people with disabilities and seniors to be able to use the transit services. I think one of the last point that I'd like to make is that one of the unfortunate parts of the way that the systems are put together here is that when you look at fiscal notes, I think one of the things that's never puts reflected in fiscal notes is the fact that when people with disabilities have access to transit services, these access to transit services can also make a difference in the health care, in the health and human services budget. We know, and I've talked with people and I've talked with families with multiple sclerosis in which they put their family member into a nursing home. And certainly transit wasn't the only reason, but it was certainly one of the primary reasons why that person is going into a nursing home and costing the state sometimes up to $70,000 a year. Now, if that person had had transit in their local community, that probably would have saved the state a great deal of money. Not one of those things that's ever going to get reflected in a fiscal note here, but it certainly, we have lots of evidence of that, where if people with disabilities have the access to those types of services, they can stay independent and stay in their own home. Thank you.
Thank you. Reverend Jonathan Zaliski. I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm from Isaiah.
For the record, I'm Pastor Jonathan Zilke. I serve Hope Lutheran Church on St. Paul's Proud East Side. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee for hearing this public testimony today, I appreciate your dedication, your time, your service to the residents of our state. I wish our governor were present with us as well. I'm here today representing Isaiah. Isaiah is an interfaith coalition of 90 congregations in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, area suburbs, and St. Cloud. We advocate for systemic change on issues of social justice. We lift up the need for the intentional building of community. We speak up and act boldly so that everyone has opportunity to share their God-given gifts and talents, to participate in our society as fully as God intends. Our involvement in advocating for dedicated, adequate funding for transit comes from the deeply held belief that we are all children of God and deserving of the dignity and respect that stems from that identity. Funding a transit system that works for everyone, not just a system for car or truck owners, acknowledges that everyone needs to get around to work, home, school, church, the doctor. This includes those unable to drive. Therefore, transit must be treated as a vital component of our transportation system. We believe God calls us to a hopeful future and that we are all better off when we share the abundant resources given to us by our Creator. Everyone here today drove in or rode in on a road that was put into place before you were born. People before us had the foresight to plan ahead for our being here. Are we doing the same for those who follow after us? Now is the time for us to decide what will be our legacy. Every day our action or inaction shapes our legacy. This is true for each of us as individuals, but also for us collectively, for the people of the state of Minnesota. Isaiah agrees with arguments made by previous speakers today about transportation as an economic engine in Minnesota, that it creates quality jobs, and that it is poor stewardship of resources to wait to build needed projects because the materials costs only continue to increase. Isaiah supports the compromised transportation bill in front of us today because we believe it will build a legacy. A legacy for a multimodal transportation that works for everyone who lives in Minnesota, rich and poor, rural, urban, suburban, young and old, and all persons of color, be they white, black, brown, or shades between. Our legacy must be to include a system that provides safe roads and builds a thriving transit system. This bill addresses big holes in our system today, but also prepares for what Minnesota will look like 30, 40, 50 years from now. The revenue generated in this bill makes a substantial investment in transit and roads, creates the infrastructure as legacy, not a debt service burden for the next generation. The analogy of using jumper cables is an appropriate one. When on a cold Minnesota morning, I used my car to jumpstart a church member's battery, both of us are able to drive home or where we need to go. Giving a little of my car battery doesn't set me back. It actually opens possibilities for both of us. This bill is a jumpstart to the transportation system. We raise funds to create opportunities so the people of Minnesota are better able to become all that God intends for them. We are shaping what is possible for Minnesotans today and our kids and our grandchildren. The time to act now. We need to act on our legacy today. Thank you.
Thank you. Reese Ledger, Teamsters Local 120.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to be joined by Kurt Block from Yellow Freight, and we have a tough act to follow. I never like to come after God, but we're going to do our best here. We'll make sure we stay within the time frame. If you're going to give the 2-minute sign to God, I think you'll give it to the Teamsters. So, Mr. Chair and Committee, my name is Reese Ledger. I'm with Teamsters Local 120, which is the largest Teamster local in the state of Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of this bill today. I wanted to return a little bit to the issue of jobs. This bill is about more than just construction jobs. Although Teamsters Local 120 represents several thousand members that supply the concrete, the bricks, the lumber, and the blocks that will go into these projects. It's about the jobs of truck drivers and warehousemen. The, the jobs of people that work, that drive on the highways and work on the loading docks every day to deliver everything from freight to food. They rely on safe, reliable, and efficient transportation systems in order to do their job, and their Teamster members like Kurt Block.
Hi, my name is Kurt Block. I'm a union steward for Local 120. In the last 18 years, I have made a living driving a truck. During Desert Storm, I delivered supplies for the Army in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Iraq. After my honorable discharge, I came home and started driving for Yellow Transportation. When I came back, the first thing I noticed was how good the roads were compared to what I got used to in the Middle East. I'm very sorry to say, but as time goes on, our roads are starting to look more and more like theirs. Bigger and deeper potholes, missing road signs, narrow shoulders with unsafe inclines, endless traffic, and unchecked road rage, even collapsed bridges. All these make my job more dangerous. And when my job is more dangerous, the risk to everyone else on the road goes up. Nobody wants accidents. I know I want to come off the road and go home to my wife and family every day. So does everybody else. We need good roads to make that happen. We also need good roads so the Minnesota trucking companies can compete and stay in business. Potholes mean damage to equipment we use and the freight we deliver. Traffic means delays in deliveries, missed pickups, and unhappy customers. None of this is good for my company or our economy. My family depends on my job. My wages, health care, and pension rely on my company. We need good roads so my company stays competitive and my job stays secure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also just like to add that Kurt and tens of thousands of Teamsters like Kurt also rely on the continued validity of their commercial driver's licenses in order to make a living and provide for their families. And unfortunately, it's not abundantly clear to me that that is something that has been included in this bill, but we just urge the committee to make sure that issue is addressed, not only for the livelihoods of Teamsters, but also to make sure that we remain eligible for $20 million in highway funding. Thank you.
I think it is in another bill, Representative Hornstein's bill.
It's in our, Mr. Chairman,
policy, yes.
And Mr. Ledger, Mr. Chairman's Ledger, that's in the transportation policy bill, which is awaiting consideration. The session was on the floor at the last night of session, so we'll get to that pretty soon.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Bob Tennyson, I-35W Solutions Alliance.
Thank you, Chairman Leader, Co-Chair Earhart, and members of the committee. My name is Robert Tennyson, and I am the legislative counsel to the I-35W Solutions Alliance. The Solutions Alliance was organized in 1989 by the then-Mayor of Burnsville, Dan McElroy, and other political and civic members of the community. It includes the counties of Dakota, Hennepin, and Scott, and the cities of Lakeville, Burnsville, Savage, Bloomington, Richfield, and Minneapolis. I-35W is a vital link in the highway system for the metropolitan area and the entire state. Before the bridge collapsed on August 1st, over 200,000 vehicles a day traveled I-35W as it passed Lake Street in Minneapolis. Each workday, so 15,000 passengers ride a mass transit of 35W. It's a vital link for Medtronic to ship high-value products from its Fridley plant to the airport for just-in-time delivery to major surgery centers around the world for use the next day. A missed connection because of traffic jams means that scheduled surgeries around the world will be canceled because the delivery of the product to MST has failed to arrive in time to meet the scheduled freight departure. The purpose and objective of the 35W Solutions Alliance is to improve the flow of people and commerce in the 35W corridor. It has consistently supported efforts to improve transit and roads that have the ability to serve its objectives and facilitate its purpose. For example, it supported the Hiawatha LRT, BRT on Cedar Avenue and I-35W, park and ride lots, improvements to 169 from Scott County across the Minnesota River to 494 in Bloomington, and of course on 35W itself, including the crosstown interchange project. Many other badly needed improvements, such as reconstruction of the I-35W-494 interchange and the reconstruction of 35W from 46th Street to downtown, the I-35W-94 connection, awaits some future construction decades from now. Just the combination of the last two projects exceeds $1 billion. Global competition unites us the luxury of pretending that our transportation system is fine. The measure is not whether Minnesota is spending more money on transportation now than it did 5 years ago, but whether it's spending enough to fix the roads, bridges, and build a modern transportation system. When we have neglected our house for 20 years, letting roof rot, the siding come loose, and windows fall out, no sensible person would claim that by buying a new door seriously addresses the problem. The measure is not whether we spent more money on repairs last year than we did the previous 20 years, but whether we will raise and spend the money to replace the roof and broken windows and repair the siding and modernize the plumbing and electrical systems before the house falls down. My board in January adopted the following proposal. One, it supports an additional $1 billion a year in new revenues to meet the needs stated by MnDOT and Metropolitan Council. It expressly supports the following tools to achieve the necessary revenues. One, an increase in the motor fuel user tax. Two, an increase in the motor vehicle registration fee. Three, a metropolitan area sales tax for transportation. A county wheelage tax without an offset. A change in the CASA formula, using 60% for need and 40% for vehicle registration or new money. Extending the transit taxing district to the entire 7-county area using the new revenues for transit stations and other capital replacement requirements related to the added territory, and prudent levels of bonding. And finally, the Urban Partnership Agreement is a vital issue for our members from Minneapolis to Lakeville and all the communities in between. For the most part, House File 2800 is consistent with the board's position. Without new funding, the vital transportation needs of the metropolitan area in Minnesota will continue to fall behind other cities of the United States and the world. It's necessary to recognize that Minnesota's transportation system is on a downward slide, from which we are counting on you to rescue us. Hopefully we will not arrive at the tipping point where the neglect of investment, where the negligent lack of investment has reached a state where our ability to compete in the global market is so badly damaged that we cannot recover and that our state is permanently impaired. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Glenn Johnson, business manager at Local 49ers, operating engineers. Welcome.
Welcome, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Glenn Johnson with the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 49. I'm known far and wide, but mostly wide. Our membership consists of about 13,000 active working men and women in the state of Minnesota, in every county in Minnesota. Last year, we had 13,500 working man and woman hours. In the year 2007, we had 11,200 working hours. We have about 5,700 unemployed workers sitting on the bench waiting to go to work today. The operating engineers run heavy equipment, cranes. We build roads and bridges. We mine the gravel. We make the aggregate. We make the asphalt that gets put on the roads. And we put the concrete on the roads. We do the paving. When those people are not working, they don't have health care. They're not building their pensions. They're going backwards in life. It's costing the state money every time people are on unemployment. I was sent here today on behalf of 13,000 members in the state of Minnesota to ask a couple questions. We know we've lost 23,000 jobs over the last 6 months, and typically we increase jobs in the state of Minnesota. Our skilled labor pool is suffering casualties. The contractors that have been in business in the state of Minnesota for decades are going broke and going out of business. They're closing their doors. They are either going to go somewhere else to be competitive and make a living. And when the time comes, if and when there's funding in this state, who's going to be doing the work? because the skilled labor pool is going to leave and go someplace where there is work. And the contractors that perform the work are going to be working elsewhere. The solution's on the table. It's been on the table for several years. That's a funding transportation bill that addresses our long-term needs. You know, I was driving over here on 94. The traffic was a little slow. So if I talk like this here, you'll wonder, because the potholes on that road drive me crazy. I drive it twice a day. It's an atrocity. I was driving on a County Road 9 down in Goodhue County last night. It was like glass, and I thought, my God, wouldn't it be nice if our roads were like this? The majority of the Minnesotans voted and sent you people here today that are on the committee. And they're asking me. We sent these representatives here to do their job. They worked hard. They did their job. They sweated it out. And they came back with a bipartisan bill. They did that 2 years in a row. To no avail. Nothing happened. Was it wasted? Were the dollars wasted? I ask, when and what are you going to do about it? We got to get this thing done. We're missing out on the federal transportation dollars for matching dollars. They're going to other states. When is it gonna change? The bottom line is that a few people short on vision and courage are still blocking the road for everyone else. It may take another election and even higher gas prices for enough people to realize there's no going back to the days of cheap transportation, cheap roads and bridges. We need to move forward. The operating engineers represent 13,000 members with their families. It's about 60,000 people we're talking about here today. Are asking you to get this job done and pass this bill on a bipartisan basis. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. David Van Hatten, Francis for Livable Communities.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. Again, my name is Dave Van Hatten. I'm with Transit for Livable Communities. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan transit advocacy organization. We work in broad coalition with a number of other organizations, such as the Senior Federation, the League of Women Voters, environmental groups, union groups, a number of groups you've heard from this morning. We strongly support this bill. We think it's an appropriate balance between roads and transit, between metro and greater Minnesota needs, and reflects a reasonable compromise. Most often when I'm in this seat, I talk about the environmental benefits. I talk about the benefits in terms of connecting communities. I talk about a few other things, but today I'd really like to focus on the economic benefits. I think that's our most pressing concern. And I'd like to share with you how we think that transit investment in particularly really benefits our regional and our statewide economy. Transit ridership was up last year 10% in the metro region. That was with no additional expansion of the system. But we know even before that 10% increase, the transit infrastructure, the people riding transit, was saving $100 million per year in our region in congestion delays. And we know that because the Texas Transportation Institute tells us that. They're the ones who monitor, that MnDOT works closely with to monitor congestion delays and monetize those costs. So they tell us that it's about $1 billion total congestion delays, or $790 per commuter per year. But they also tell us that transit saves $100 million a year and could save a lot more if we had a bigger, better system. That's the case in a number of our peer regions. And I will quickly send around, I think most of you have seen the pennies graph, but I just want to remind all of you that when we talk about the funding mechanism for transit, and a regional sales tax, this is how essentially all of our peers fund transit. The document that's being passed around shows all of these peers, and if you look in the fine print in the parens, it tells you the actual rate of sales tax in each of those regions. And I'm going to just quickly list about 10 cities that will have a higher regional sales tax, continue to have a higher regional sales tax in our metropolitan area after we pass this bill into law. Atlanta, Cleveland, Dallas, Denver, Houston, Phoenix, San Diego, San Francisco, San Jose, and Seattle. So we know that our peers are investing about 30% more in transit. We know that they get much higher ridership, 30% more per capita. We know that they get much higher ridership from that. We also know very critically that this stimulates and focuses economic development. One rail line in Denver, the Southwest Rail Line, generated $6.2 billion in development along that line. So we know that this proposal in front of you is somewhat a large investment. I believe the number is $2.2 billion over the 10 years for the regional sales tax. What I want to really stress today is that two things. One, that only 5 years ago, our Metropolitan Council, with the best consultants in the world, projected, and this was adopted by that Metropolitan Council under an independent administration, projected that building out that system and encouraging land supportive land uses would save our region $2.5 to $3 billion over that same time period. It saves it through additional costs for local roads and sewers. So really, if we make this investment, it can come at no net cost to the region and have all the other benefits in terms of congestion relief, environment, safety, etc. So we think it's a very smart and, again, a very compromise, reasonable investment. We look at this this investment plan, hopefully building out the Met Council's 2030 plan by about 2020, 8 new transitways covering the bus system. But what's missing is that the Met Council just put out the early analysis from their study leading up to their Transit 2030 update of a number of 29 additional corridors that each of the seven counties forwarded to them to study. And at least 10 or 15 have been recommended for further study. So this bill very much is a compromise. It's time to get it done and build a better economic future for all Minnesota residents. We know that 1 million more people are coming to the state by 2030. We know that there will be a larger segment of the elderly population. And we know that this investment plan is good for all Minnesotans. And I encourage you to get it done. Thank you.
Thank you. Ann Fang. Welcome. Minnesota State Building Trades.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thanks for hanging around to hear my testimony. My name is Dick Anfang. I'm privileged to be the president of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. And I'm going to go to a gold plate dinner next Thursday night, and I hope I'm in the final three there, too. in the building trades, in preparing for this year's legislative session, quickly determined that we have three objectives: jobs, jobs, and jobs. This bill is the biggest and most needed of all the job-creating initiatives that will come before the legislature this year. Others certainly are important and needed, like the Omni bill, the expansion of the Mall of America, and exciting projects on the Iron Range. This bill does the most for jobs. Its passage will be the stimulus to reverse the disinvestment in Minnesota infrastructure and reward reinvestment in private and public partnerships that will be generated by improved infrastructure. It provides new dollars, which show a long-time continued commitment by the state of Minnesota to Minnesota businesses and its workers and citizens. Our members need the jobs that will result in the passage of this bill. Our working hours, as have been earlier indicated, have been in the decline for years and are at record lows. And unemployment and underemployment is equal to the early 80s, which we've been trying to forget for over two decades. These jobs that are needed are real jobs. These are real jobs for real people, and there is a real need. The Minnesota Building and Construction Trades Council urges the quick passage and total bipartisan support for to benefit business and the good jobs for all quarters of our state. This is not the time to pound the no new taxes drum. This is the time to invest in Minnesota's future, and if we can create this new attitude of investment one nickel at a time as we drive our cars and our trucks to deliver ourselves to our workplaces, to deliver our goods, transport our commodities, and live our lives, we should do it. We should do it now, and it's the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jerry Munyon, Minnesota Public Transit Association. Oh, well. We'll come back. We'll circle back.
Good afternoon. My name is Sherry Munyon, and I represent the Minnesota Public Transit Association. This is an association that represents transit providers throughout the state in the suburban, urban, and greater Minnesota areas. And we are here today in support of the bill. Although it doesn't meet all of the needs that have been identified, both through the documented transportation plans of the Metropolitan Council and the Minnesota Department of Transportation 2001 Greater Minnesota Plan, this will finally go a long way towards meeting the true needs that have been identified. I think you've heard a lot of testimony about the specifics on many of the metropolitan projects, the importance of the transitways and increasing the bus service. And then in Greater Minnesota, we still have several counties who have no service at all, who have very limited service in only select municipalities. 11 transit providers in Greater Minnesota have Sunday service, 11 transit providers in Greater Minnesota have evening service, and only about a quarter of them have any service on Saturday. So we thank you for looking at this bill. This is the third bill in 4 years, and we do believe it's a compromise bill. It isn't the everything bill. It doesn't meet all of the documented needs that are out there, but it'll make significant progress. And we have seen a growing reliance statewide by employers on transit for their employees, and particularly as we're looking at second shift workers, even in Greater Minnesota, there's been an increasing request by employers to the Greater Minnesota Transit Services to help meet those needs. So we ask for your support to pass this bill. The dedicated funding allows for planning and allows for dedicated money that we know will be in, and we can address the needs of our citizens.
Mr. Chairman, members, Dan Larson, today representing the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, that is 28 counties that operate as a caucus within the Association of Minnesota Counties. Many of the systems that Sherry just referenced are systems that are counties that are within my membership, so I want to thank her for that testimony. I believe this bill contains many of the components of a funding package that will begin to address the serious and growing backlog of transportation needs. Each year, as you've heard the parade of people come through to testify before you today, each year the funding impasse continues. Projects are deferred, safety is jeopardized, development is stalled, and costs increase. Property taxes are increasingly relied upon as a funding measure for rural roads or roads in rural areas. So the bill before you appears to begin to address these serious concerns, and we appreciate the efforts of Representative Leader and others that have worked to put this package before you, and we look forward to working with you towards passage as the days and hopefully not weeks, but as it moves through its process. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ann Sims, League of Minnesota Cities.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Ann Sims. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and I do have a handout. The League, as you probably know, is a statewide association, and we represent all but a handful of Minnesota's 854 cities. I'm here today to express our support for House File 2800. What we're passing out right now is the League's 2008 transportation funding policy position. It was developed in a day-long workshop, and I should note it was on a beautiful fall day. We sat inside the city of Bloomington City Hall and gathered with a group of elected city officials as well as city engineers to develop this. You'll see clearly from our position that city officials see funding for roads, bridges, and transit as a priority. Transportation funding is a quality of life issue, and investments are critical to economic vitality and public safety. Further, adequate funding for state highways, county state aid highways, and municipal state aid is a critical component of property tax relief. We are actually surveying our members at the present time about the impact of transportation on property taxes, and we'll be glad to share those results with you when we have them. I don't want to go into our position any further, but I would urge you to read it when you have a moment. You'll see that it calls for balanced, dedicated, and sustainable funding. We believe this bill meets those criteria. Our policy also demonstrates that the League, like the others who have talked before me today, believes that this bill does represent a compromise. You'll see that the League supports a number of funding mechanisms that are not included in this bill. Nevertheless, our members recognize this as a very solid proposal, and in fact, many city councils are considering resolutions of support. Our hope is that this bill will become law, and we look forward to working with you. Thanks for your attention today.
Thank you. Now, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify?
Oh, good.
Well, thank you. We're going to take about a break of 12 minutes, say 5 after 5, 5. We'll be back. So, temporary recess. There we start. All right, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr.
We're calling on you.
Is this alive or not?
We need quiet, silence, and all that so we can hear Bernie.
Now it's alive? Is this speaker on? Mr. Chair, yesterday we had some requests for additional information, and I think that's in the packet, except also I'd like to call on Kevin Gray, to respond to the question that was brought up about the loss probability of losing federal funding. That's what Mr. Chair. I think Mr. Gray is in the audience somewhere.
We should probably move this bill whenever you like. I don't think we did that yesterday.
I was going to move it when we're ready to pass it.
Okay, well.
But that's fine. Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 2800.
Thank you.
And Mr. Gray.
Now you want Mr. Gray?
Mr. Gray. For the members of the committee, the question was raised yesterday about the fact that some of them in the bill, it appeared that by not putting the total amount of federal monies in that we had, it appeared that there would be a loss of some federal funding in relationship to the I-35W bridge replacement. And we reviewed it, and Representative Magnus also is aware of it, and we just like to have it for the record if Mr. Gray could testify to the fact that we will or will not lose federal money.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Gray, Chief Financial Officer for MnDOT, and this is to clarify that the appropriation cited in the bill of $132 million is sufficient for us to deliver our program for the biennium 08-09, and that we will indeed be taking advantage of all federal funds that are coming our way.
Yep. Very good. Thank you.
And, well, Mr. Chairman, one other point I wanted to make too is this will not delay any projects, and this will leave your MnDOT's cash flow position in a positive balance for the biennium. Then,
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, and members, absolutely, that's correct.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. I have an author's amendment.
Okay.
Most of it is, in my opinion, technical, and I believe it's been passed out. Is that correct?
That would be 2888.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. If I could just explain the amendment, if we had further questions, I'll have Mr. Burris get in detail. Actually, the amendment removed that $7.7 million that we had some question about on the general fund appropriation to the Met Council for the Hiawatha Light Rail. That removes that general fund money. It makes a technical change more clarity in that bonding article. We have some questions about that issue. It eliminates the requirements that GO bonds for the local road improvement program be expended outside the metro area. And it clarifies the problem we had in the tax credit with the $25. It makes it per household, not $25 per person. And it starts to phase in of the motor vehicle lease tax, sales tax revenue in the fiscal year 2010. And it revises the Metropolitan Transportation Area sales tax provisions so that a tax is imposed by the participating counties. And the tax is only imposed in counties that are part of the Joint Powers Agreement. And the transportation area consists of those counties in the 7-county metro area that choose to participate, as well as eligible counties that are adjacent to a participating county. It also says that a county cannot impose a tax under both the Metropolitan Transit Sales Provision and the Greater Minnesota Transportation Sales Tax Provision. If imposed, it must be one or the other. And if there's a dispute resolution mechanism, or there is a dispute mechanism relating to the approval by the Metropolitan Council of projects to be funded. And also to add the cross-reference to the new sales tax provisions for clarity. We had some problems with that. And to clarify that the restrictions on tolling facilities do not apply to highway projects that create new HOV or HOT lanes or otherwise expand capacity, so that the changes to the I-35W under the Urban Partnership Agreement are not effective. And that's the basis of the author's amendment, Mr. Chair. And if there are questions, I'll try to answer them. And further questions, Mr. Burris is prepared to review it. And I'd like to move the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Hobart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then was it with the page 5, delete section 4, then it is the intent of the bill that the Hennepin County Regional Rail would go back to paying the portion of operating for Hiawatha for 09?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, are you talking about in the amendment? Or are you talking in the bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm talking about the amendment, page 1, line 2, which the net effect is deleting page, on the bill, page 5, section 4, and that also deletes the language absolving Hennepin County Regional Rail from operating costs for Hiawatha line, and I'm wondering if that's picked up somewhere else or there was the intent.
Mr. Chair, could I refer that question to Representative Hornstein? He's taking the transit portion.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Holberg, and Mr. Burris can also clarify this. But in the original language, there was an allocation from the general fund, and it's really the intention of levying the sales tax, that the sales tax is being used to not only fund the construction but the operation of transitways, new transitways, and I would argue in this case existing transitways, and also the UPA. So rather than fund the operations through the general fund, we'd like the operations to be accomplished through the metro sales tax. So that's, I believe, what this language would accomplish. Is that correct, Mr. Burr?
Yes. And Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, just for clarification, I haven't been able to read the entirety of the 8-page amendment yet. So where in your amendment does it then state that the Joint Powers Board shall fund the operating subsidy for Hiawatha?
Mr. Burris,
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, it's not an explicit statement. It's a change to the metro area sales tax provisions. It's on page 5, line 10. That amount has been increased by the $7.7 million that was previously a general fund appropriation.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Any other questions or comments on the A8 amendment? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Next.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any more amendments. I believe there are amendments, I believe, at the desk. I don't have copies of them here if there are.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Magnin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I Representative Weider, I'm trying to figure out on page 35, with transit funding, section 7, it says in subdivision 1, the Regional Rail Authority will not contribute more than 10% of the capital cost, and as my understanding in subdivision 2, that Rail Authority will not contribute any funds to pay operating and maintenance costs. My question, Mr. Chairman and Representative Weider, is who pays these costs then? Is that, how are those costs covered in the bill, or are they in the current language or statutes or what?
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to refer those to Representative Hornstein. I could attempt to answer, but I think he'd have the more correct answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would also, Mr. Schreiber, Commissioner McLaughlin is here as well, but again, this is similar to the question that Representative Holberg asked. We are making a transition into funding the operations of transit ways, which include light rail, commuter rail, rapid bus service, to be accomplished through the regional sales. So I believe that relates to that. This language is consistent with that change that we're making in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, this entity then is going to pay all of the operating costs that are needed outside of the fare box revenues, or is some other entity going to be stuck with it that had to contribute? The federals or the states or... That's the question I've got in my mind, because trying to figure out how we... especially the operating costs.
Mr. Chair, I think the thinking behind this is that right now we have a disproportionate amount of these costs being borne by counties in the form of a property tax. And so you have a variety of ways to fund transit ways. We're going to have the metro sales tax, but we're going to hopefully through this tax have a much better opportunity to leverage federal funds. So, for example, when it comes to the Central Corridor and Hiawatha future corridors, up to half of that is funded through federal funds. So this would not preclude federal funding for the construction of these plants.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's good. I appreciate that. I understand from earlier testimony today that the transit ridership is up 10% in the last year, but yet we see entities looking at covering the operating costs on this. And I support transit. I don't have a problem with that. I'm just wondering if we're losing sight of who's going to be paying the operating costs of these down the road, and if we can't cover them now with good ridership. Yeah, in increasing ridership, I think that's a question we need to think through. And if it's covered in here, then that's fine. And I applaud you for doing that, Representative. But if it's not, then I'd like to know that.
Well, thank you for that, Mr. Chairman and President. Again, I think this is a cleaner and more straightforward way of funding capital and operating costs for transit than we've had. And, I hope this will avoid kind of the annual ritual of going to the legislature and asking for general fund money to, plug holes in transit. We have MVEST to fund the operations. That's a little uneven. But I think in terms of new transit ways, construction and operation, this really ought to get the job done.
Any other questions or comments on on the bill, I guess we're on roll. Now we will move to...
Chairman.
Oh, Representative Bruce.
Yep, thank you. Representative Leader, Chairman Leader, on the original bill, I guess the one marked 5584 that we have in front of, on page 5, 5.6, under transfers. Now this will bring back some memories of you and I sitting in a meeting several years ago when the state airport fund was raided. And I'm looking here between 5.6 and about 5.11, maybe 5.13. It talks about giving the Commissioner of Transportation, with the approval of Commissioner of Finance, the ability to transfer unencumbered balances among the appropriations from the Trunk Highway Fund and the State Airports Fund. But it's not clear to me where they can move unencumbered balances, and what I'm wondering here is, are we giving them power to do what they've already done? I got to remind everyone, they did put the money back last July, thanks to good work by many of us, including Chairman Leader. But, Ms. Leader, what do you have in mind there? What's that about?
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, basically, MnDOT has that capability to transfer within their
department,
except for construction money.
Okay.
And basically, it's not normally a long-term transfer. Usually, it should be short-term. But in the case of the State Airport Fund, we had special legislation on that. I think that's the difference.
Okay. So it's not like they're going to snag this money and throw it in the general fund. And it's got to stay within MnDOT for purposes that it was collected for.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, that's the intent. And we don't want to see it happen like it did to the Air Force Fund. That's correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're ready for the next amendment. Whoever, 28A2, whose amendment is that?
Which one?
Oh.
A2.
Mr. Chair, I have that, but Article 4 has been deleted. But I wonder if you could just explain to me then on the new amendment on page 1, the actual, it says the general sales tax under Section 297A, 92, and Section 993. Can we just explain what that actually is then?
Are you presenting A2?
Yes. Well, A2 has been deleted. I mean, that portion of the bill has been deleted, so no. I would withdraw the amendment.
Oh, you're withdrawing the amendment.
Because it is no longer part of the new amendment and has been amended on. That piece was deleted. But I do have a question.
Yeah. Oh.
But if it could just define, I'm withdrawing that, but should we just define then what the actual payment would? And I'm looking at on page 1 of the amendment, of A8 amendment, where line 23, when it says impose a general sales tax under Section 297.992, can we just define what that language actually is?
Mr.
Burris, I think it probably helps.
Mr. Chair, if I may, that refers to a section number. I don't have it. We could have Mr. Burris explain that section.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, members, that provision is adding language that specifically refers to the new sales taxes, the metro area sales tax and the greater Minnesota sales tax. So it's clarifying that political subdivisions can... It's clarifying the situations under which a political subdivision can impose a sales tax so that it includes the two new provisions. That's what 297A.992 and 993 are.
Can we define those? If the chair, can we define what those provisions are? Is it possible? Do you have the verbiage on those? I can pick them up.
The verbiage?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruce, the language on that starts in the amendment on page 2. It's page 2, line 10, is the metro area sales tax language. So that's section 297A.992.
Oh, I see.
And then the greater Minnesota transportation sales tax is also in the amendment on page 7, line 8.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Are we ready for the next amendment? All right. Who's yours?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any amendments up here. I mean, if they're passed out, I need one.
Okay, well, somebody's presenting amendments, and I don't have any, so...
Mr. Chair?
Should we go home?
I have an oral amendment.
Okay.
Do you want to look at that and...
Representative Leader, did you have the 24-hour rule in place?
We didn't have a problem with it.
Okay.
They have an amendment, and we had an amendment. We waived it. Representative Holbrook has spoken to me.
Mr. Chair and Chair Leader. This amendment is actually would be to the A8 amendment that's already drafted, and it would be page 7, line 31. And what the net effect of this is, it relates to the ability of MnDOT to impose tolling and the dynamic shoulder pricing and the UPA project on 35W. And the bill as it stands would allow that forever and ever and ever. And given that the UPA project is a demonstration project, we haven't tried dynamic shoulder pricing, we don't know how it's going to work, it would sunset MnDOT's authority to do this in 2012, so we would then have the opportunity to evaluate whether or not we wanted to continue. Initially, Representative Hornstein was supportive of this. He now tells me that he may have drank some Kool-Aid, so I'm not exactly sure what his position is. But it's an attempt to have an ability of the legislature to evaluate whether or not this is an effective way to manage traffic in that corridor. And for people like me who believe that the UPA project is actually going to be detrimental to the ultimate goal of a busway in that corridor, to be able to have that evaluation as well.
Representative Holbert, when will that project be completed?
My understanding is it has to move pretty rapidly. I think it's sometime in 2009 that it has to be up and running. And Mr. Shetman's shaking his head yes.
Representative Hausman.
Would it be fair to ask MnDOT to come forward and give their interpretation of the effects of this?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I just didn't catch, what's the proposed oral amendment? A deletion or an addition?
Page 7, line 31, after 2007, insert, but before September 1, 2012. So for the period of time from the time that they implement it till September 1st of 2012, they would have the authority to collect money and do tolling in that project, that demonstration project, but in order to get an extension of that authority in that corridor to continue to do it, they'd have to come back and tell us how it's working.
Thank you.
Well, is there anybody from MnDOT that's here? And I guess that'd be, I'd like to ask them if they think, Ms. Parker, if you think that a legislature in the future might take this out of consideration, this amendment.
Mr. Chair, before that, I didn't get the number and page.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Page 7, this is of the A8 amendment. Line 31, after 2007, insert, but before September 1, 2012. So in other words, it puts a five-year, give or take a few months, window of them giving them the authority to do this. But we sunset it.
The tolling would end on 20. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. We've signed an agreement with the Federal Highway Administration to receive $133 million in federal funds, and the governor has requested 55, and part of the money is being used for the construction of the toll facilities and the price dynamic shoulder lanes, and we would rather not suspend it after it's only been in operation for 3 years. It won't be operational until September of 2009, and the portion of the hot lane that goes through the Crosstown project won't be operational until the fall of 2010 when that project ends, so that would only give us 2 years. And we have been thinking all along that MnPath has worked so well that it's quite likely that a similar situation will work equally well on 35W, and it's a matter of choice for people whether they use it or not, so we would prefer not to suspend the operation of the tolling on the Price shoulder lane. If for any reason we thought that it wasn't working and there were any issues about it, we could always suspend it ourselves by simply not opening it. We are not required by law to keep it open. The commissioner has discretion. And perhaps people are concerned that because it's called a shoulder lane, it will be like a regular shoulder. But in fact, it will be wide enough for the buses on it to go 55 miles an hour, which is better than having them going 35 on the shoulders right now. So we would rather not suspend the Price shoulder lane in 2012.
Any more discussion on the oral amendment? Representative Horsley.
Thank you. And I would encourage a no vote. And I wanted to just clarify that Kool-Aid comment because Representative Holberg and I have been talking about this since May when I went up to her on the House floor and gave her the good news about all the federal money we are potentially going to get. And Representative Holberg is right. I mean, I think initially I had some concerns, particularly about the disposition of the lanes north of 46th Street in my district, but I think that we've made some really good strides with the Met Council and MnDOT as this project has evolved, and it really has evolved over these period of months. And I think it's a great project, and we had a good tour of the corridor and the Transportation Policy Committee. There's going to be other opportunities to discuss this as well. There's certainly a lot of policy language related to this which is not in the bill. And if there's certainly concerns about future evaluation of this with the legislature, MnDOT, we can talk about that in the policy context. But I think it's a good project, and my concern, and maybe if you could clarify a little bit more, Ms. Parker, is would anything like this jeopardize the $133 million federal dollars that we would get if we start to tinker with, this kind of evaluation process? Anything we should worry about as we move forward discussing the policy matters related to this bill with regard to the stipulations in the federal grant agreement?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, I don't have a copy of the grant agreement with me, but Mr. Rudin went out and called Bernie Arsenault, who's our project manager for this, and he said that he believed it would jeopardize the federal agreement because that activity is part of what's being paid for by the federal money.
Thank you.
President Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my understanding is it's a 3-year demonstration project. And so the feds didn't say that you have to do this forever and to get this money. What the purpose of the UPA is to try new congestion mitigation tools that could possibly be replicated in other municipalities or regions and for a specific period of time. And so I don't think it's fair to say that if there's some kind of sunset to this after the demonstration project would conclude that it would jeopardize the project. We didn't sign our life away to the feds, or at least I hope we didn't.
Well, here we are. It's about time to get to a vote on this, I would say. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's nothing in the current language that would forbid a future legislature from reconsidering the use of congestion pricing on the part of 35W that would be included in the UPA. Is that correct? Perhaps Ms. Parker would be a better person to answer that question, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Parker, they have another question for you. Would you like to repeat that?
I'm sorry, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, there's nothing in the language right now that would prevent future legislatures from considering removing the congestion pricing mechanism, as you said, that the Commissioner of Transportation could indeed do when this demonstration project ends.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is correct. There is nothing in the language now that would prevent that And in the policy bill language that Representative Hornstein referred to, there is a section that would require MnDOT and Met Council to make an annual report to the legislature on how the program is working. So there'd be an opportunity to review it annually.
So, are there any more questions on this amendment, on the oral amendment? If not, may we move to a vote. All in favor of the oral amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
The amendment is not adopted. We have another amendment here, I guess. A4. Who belongs to A4?
Mr. Chairman, I'll claim it, but I'll withdraw it. Since that was fixed in Representative Leader's A8 amendment.
Who has A5?
Mr. Chairman, I have. And I'd be happy to talk about it here.
All right, Representative Beard. On the amendment A5.
A5. Now, before we do, I need a little housekeeping advice here. Actually, on the original 5584, the 30-some page deal we're working with here, I'm proposing to amend page 21, line 31, the original bill. Yeah. However, it was touched a little bit by this Representative Leader's 8 amendment on page 5, line 30, although it says the same thing. Mr. Burris, which one should we attempt to amend? Or where'd he go? If it's all the same, Mr. Chairman, with everyone, let's just work with the big bill here and we can go from there. That'll be all right?
All right.
So it's page 21, line 31. Delete 5 and insert 1, and I'm happy to speak to the amendment for a moment.
Line 31, will you repeat that, please?
Oh, wait a minute. Now, somebody just handed me a new one here that says it's page 5, line 30 of the A8 amendment.
Where's the one we're working on?
Mr. Chair, Representative here, that was me. That was you that did that. Was that you that did it? I'm not my mother, I don't have eyes in the back of my head.
First was one step ahead.
Well, let's work from that one, 5:30. And I want to talk about bikes and bike trail projects for just a moment. Because I believe the bill, as it's presented, takes 5% of the sales tax or the bonding from the sales tax and says that must be spent on bicycle facilities. And I'd like to restrict that to 1%. And I want to tell you what I've run into here the last couple of weeks. Many of you know, since I've been here, I've always told people I was open to voting for a modest gas tax. So we had our precinct caucuses Tuesday night, which were packed in Scott County, where I represent, just like everywhere else. And people were just scolding me because they know that I'll vote for a gas tax. And they kept saying, don't do that. It's wasteful. You'll just blow the money on things like park and ride shelters or bike trails or that $10 million bike bridge is the one that really had them going. And I had to take the time to explain to them, no, you're confusing the state sales tax, gas tax, with the federal gas tax. Somehow the feds monkey with their gas tax revenue and do all kinds of things in addition to building roads and bridges. But I have to explain to them that in the state, our money is constitutionally dedicated to be spent on roads and bridges. Which seems to calm them down a little bit, except here the last couple of days since this bill's been up, a lot of my friends have been calling and emailing me again and saying, don't do it, you got plenty of money, and besides, we don't want you wasting gas tax on things like bike bridges. So I'm reading this bill, and by golly, there's bike bridges in there again. And I'm here to tell you, it's not helping the cause. Now, most of my government sites in the district I represent would love for me to vote for this transportation bill. Almost everybody else, the ones that are actually raising kids and earning a living and paying their taxes, don't want me to vote for this bill. I'm kind of torn, because I'd like to be able to make a good case that we need to invest in roads and bridges, but what's really giving them heartburn is when we do other things, and even the appearance of something else, like up to 5% of the bond proceeds for bike trails and bike commuting facilities. And I'm telling you, there's very few people in Scott County that commute across the river and into downtown Minneapolis on their bicycles. They do within the county, that's fine. But it's just something that's not playing well back in Peoria or District 35A, and I really appreciate your support as we're getting this down from 5% to 1%.
When Reagan passed his nickel gas tax, he dedicated 4 cents to roads and 1 cent to other things like transit. So the feds got into this when Reagan was president, whatever the year that he signed that into law. I think it was 93. Would be around then.
83.
Thank you. Ah, too. I don't know, but he did it. So that's how we got into all of this other things out of the federal gas tax.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hartman.
Yes,
thanks. I just want to call the committee's attention to the fact this isn't about gas tax revenue. This is about the sales tax revenue and how that can be spent. And it does say no more than 5%, so it sets a 5% ceiling. It could be, and I suspect in the early years, very little of the money will be spent on that because of the pent-up needs for transit and road projects. But I think that, you know, Representative Oberstar has talked about this a lot, that if we had a mode shift of just a few percentage points of people from cars to bikes, and that it would make a huge impact on our national oil consumption picture. And so I oppose the amendment, and I hope that we'll vote it down.
Any other discussion? Questions? Representative Hornsby.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think Representative Portman covered it very well. But just, you know, I think it's a moment to talk just a little bit about the Joint Powers Board, that this is going to include elected, you know, county commissioners from those counties that are participating. There's a flexible fund, so this doesn't say, there's not a line item that says you will spend $5 or 5% of the metro sales tax dollars on bikes. So, I mean, I understand that, you know, you had some dialogue with your constituents about it, but I want to say that there's no mandate, there's no requirement. This is something that through our elected officials at the Joint Powers Board, a particular project will be ranked and evaluated. And Representative Hortman's right. I mean, just in Minneapolis alone in the last year, we saved 3.6 million gallons of gas via bike commuting. It's legitimate commuting. People do it. You know, the governor spoke eloquently about relying too much on Hugo Chavez and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and Vladimir Putin for our oil. And so I think that, you know, we've got to do everything we possibly can to reduce our consumption of oil. And this is a very important part of that. So I think we ought to keep this in here and vote down the amendment.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'd ask just a blanket question. What kind of dollars are we talking here between 5% and 1%? What kind of difference? Because if we're talking tens of millions of dollars, then it's a substantial sum that we should be considering here. But, I mean, if we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, it may not be that big of a deal. I guess I'm willing to take a stand on tens of millions. I'm not willing to take a stand on hundreds of thousands.
Representative
Hodges. Mr. Chair, I think one of our fiscal staff told us that over the 10 years of the bill, the metro sales tax raises $2.2 billion. So I think we are talking on the magnitude of millions of dollars, between 1% and 5%. I'm no math major, but...
Are we waiting for a fiscal staff to scribble here, or what?
He doesn't have a calculator.
Yeah. How many?
Mr. Chair, that'll be a moment. We're working on it.
Okay. Do we, how much? Representative Hausman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I did, just in the, since we have a minute, it did occur to me we were missing an opportunity, though, because it sounded to me as though Representative Deard might be setting up a possibility on which he might be inclined to vote for this bill. So we need to be careful about our hasty discussion of this.
Mr. Chair, I'd feel quite safe. I was sure you were going to demolish my little heartfelt amendment, and I'd be off the hook. Tongue firmly in cheek, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Stewart.
Mr. Chair, members, the difference between the 5% and the 1% for the 10-year total is around $91 million.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it goes to the point of why are we here? I mean, we are here to put more money into roads and bridges. We're to put it into transit. And those are the pretenses that we have brought this bill forward, that all of the testimony that we've heard today has been about, let's increase the infrastructure. When we're talking about bicycles, you're talking about areas in which cities or local adjacent communities can come into an agreement and make deals at community and local levels rather than the state funding those transit systems. I think we need to stick to the majors here and get off the minors, and that would be, if you're going to give some money to bicycle trails, then it should be no more than 1%. I would speak in favor of Representative Beard's amendment.
More discussion?
Can I just say one thing? I'm talking about Egan right now just because I know a number of people in there actually try to use their bicycles. And because the Cedar Avenue Bridge does not have any way for people to walk or get across that bridge other than a car, that's very limited. Like, I do know one man who works in Minneapolis, makes a point to bicycle, but he has to use the Mendota Bridge, which means an extra 7 miles. Now, I don't know about you, but if biking an extra 7 miles to me is a major commitment. So I know I've got people in my community that are making the commitment to try to decrease their use of automobiles. And so I'm thinking, if we want to do something about global warming, if we want to do something that's forward, we need to keep our options open. There we go.
Representative Madar.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would like to echo Representative Mason's opinion on this. I know in Apple Valley we're very anxious to get that Cedar Avenue Bridge opened up again for bicycle traffic all the way through. But I also would like to acknowledge that the governor has a commitment to reduce obesity in this state. So I would think that the members of his caucus would think that that's a very reasonable thing to do for us, to open up more bike paths and get people on bikes and out of cars. So I'd like to speak in favor of voting down the amendment and keeping it at 5%. Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, too, I, too, would echo that sentiment. As the Representative Severson was talking about, this is not a roads committee. This is not a car committee. This is a transportation committee. And bicycles are a form of transportation. Even lowly old carpenters, I worked with many that rode bikes. And in fact, I worked with one who was very much a fanatic about riding his bike to and from work. And it was very difficult, even in the city of Minneapolis, to get to and from where he had to get where he lived. And so what we can do to make that easier, will help the environment, help save gas, is a wonderful thing. So I think we should vote this amendment down.
Are we ready for a vote?
Yes.
All those in favor of this amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment is not adopted. I have to go to a meeting, so Representative Hornstein is going to take this over. I'll be back about midnight. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Representative Earhart. And we have, I think, just one more, maybe two, but our next one is a Representative Severson amendment, and it's the A6 amendment, which I think is being passed out now. So why don't you go ahead and explain the amendment while people are...
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and kind of getting into this legislative stuff, getting back into the saddle here. The amendment, as it was written, was written originally to the original bill before amendment. I think the couple changes, if I could, an oral amendment here. I think on line 1.1, it should read, move the House file number 2800A8 amendment as follows. So we're amending the A8 amendment that was amended to the original bill. And then in page 1.2, mm-hmm. it should be line 2, line 19.
Page 2?
Page 2 of the A8 amendment. And Mr. Chair and members, this goes to the adjoining counties that are adjoining the 7-county metro area that are assuming the half-cent sales tax if adopted by at least 4 of the adjoining counties. The issue here being half-cent sales tax without a referendum. And I understand a little bit of the mentality here, particularly after having voted for the Twin Stadium. I'll tell you some conditions that were on that Twin Stadium that I don't believe are present here that sets a dangerous precedent. Number one, Twin Stadium was going into, their contract was coming to an end. The ball club itself was looking at contraction to take a couple teams out, and the November elections were going to be on our doorstep. We were potentially going to lose the Twins. We're going to lose a huge economic engine in the Twin Cities, and so I think there were other considerations that made that an exception. Also, the tax that was there was 0.15% or one-third of the half-cent that's proposed in this particular bill. I think those set up exceptions that say, you know what, if you don't want to have a referendum, we're talking about an economic engine, we're talking about, you know, we're willing in this particular case to take the heat for the 7-county metro or for Hennepin County in particular in that case. I think that doesn't carry over to this one. And I would like to see a referendum on half-cent sales tax in the 7-county metro, but that's not what this bill is going to. This bill goes to those that are adjoining those that I believe do not get the necessary, I believe do not get the necessary positive economic impact or the benefits of the 7-county metro as directly as the 7-county metro counties do as those adjoining. So I think in order to set a barrier around that 7-county metro in terms of a referendum, this bill basically says that those adjoining have to have a referendum on the next election ballot if it's going to be adopted by a vote of the majority of the people. And I would be happy to clarify any questions on this particular issue, Mr. Chair. Also, just one other point I wanted to make, and I know that you know, a number of us have been here for a while. I was here when we brought the half-cent sales tax through the St. Cloud, and I was in line with probably 18 or 20 other local municipalities or areas that wanted that half-cent sales tax, and we went through a pretty rigorous hearing. Of the 18 that brought their proposals forward, 2 were granted. At that time, we kind of came up with a proposal that basically said, you know, rather than do this by coming to the legislature and asking for permission to have that half-cent sales tax after the people have had a referendum and then grant it, we should just allow the people to actually have a referendum and pass it themselves with the legislature getting out of the business. What we're doing here is we're basically saying, legislature says it's okay, you want to tag onto this one with a half-cent sales tax, your county commissioners are elected, you go ahead and do that, and the people are dropped completely out of the picture, which was never the intent with that policy, and I believe that this extends that policy into the outstate, which is beyond the purview of the legislature. So I would ask for your support on this, and I think we can bring some modicum of rationale to the actual election process of taxing the people in the adjoining counties.
Mr. Chair, usually you're in a position of answering this, and I don't know if you want to relinquish the chair for a minute to
sure.
Representative probably moral. But I'd like to, I'm not questioning the amendment, but I'd like to ask Mr. Burris. It appears to me that maybe we've got some ambiguity, if you want to say it. In looking at the amendment, do they need to, I think, you know, the probability that they may require a referendum in the first place for Representative Cedars. I don't know. I'd like to have him respond to that.
I think first we'll turn Representative Portman.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Burris needs the question. The Stevenson Amendment would require that adjoining counties have a majority vote if they're outside of the metropolitan area. And Representative Leader asked you whether, because it's a greater Minnesota county anyway, would it have to have a referendum anyway under the bill draft?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, under the bill draft, a referendum wouldn't be required for any adjoining counties to join in the metro transportation area.
Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Severson. I understand your concern on this, and in your area, it's conceivable that you would be adjoining to Anoka and going up the North Star line. And I would just say that I think that this amendment would make it harder to get North Star to be extended. And then if your county, if we did adopt this amendment and your county rejected on a popular vote imposing the tax in your area, then the operating expenses for North Star in your county then fall on the property tax. And I just would rather see a little bit more transparency where people know this sales tax that they're paying goes for transportation, whereas when they pay their property tax, it's kind of like, who knows? I mean, it's a big lump, and who knows how the county is spending it. So I have a concern that it could negatively impact North Star, and I want to see North Star go to St. Cloud and up to, you know, Fort Ripley if we can. So I hope that we'll vote the amendment down, but I certainly understand your concern about wanting to give a voice to the voters in your area.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for Mr. Burris. Looking at the A8th Amendment and looking at the definition of eligible county and then the definition of minimum guarantee county, counties that are adjoining to any county that's part of the metropolitan transportation area, so that could be starts with the seven counties and then can be an adjoining county and then kind of chaining either whether it's up the North Star corridor or up the Rush Line corridor through, you know, initially Chisago but then Pine and others. I believe that every county that then adds, that is added to that area, isn't it true that if the if each county is participating and contributes less than 3% of the total tax collected, that the county is guaranteed to have invested in their county at least as much as the sales taxes they've contributed to the pot. Is that correct?
Mr. Burr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, that is correct. That minimum guarantee provision now applies to all counties that would be part of the metro transportation area.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Burr, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Because I've been tossing this over and over in my head, Representative Severson, about how we go about these corridors that are outside the metropolitan area, and I think you probably have as much pause as I do about the growth of both land use authority and other issues related to that council. And we are, Chisago County, being probably one step closer than to the process than your county, I believe, correct? Under the minimum guarantee, if our county boards choose to join, we're guaranteed to get back at least as much as we put in projects on the ground. And so there's a likelihood, maybe I should whisper this rather than state it clearly, as obviously as I'm about to, but there's a likelihood that our counties would receive more investment than we would put in, and there's this firewall saying that our money won't go into the metro area and get lost there, that it will actually result in real projects on the ground and likely a greater sum than if we were to do this on our own. I was thinking about whether to amend your amendment, but I think I'm actually going to oppose it because of that minimum guarantee and the fact that our counties would actually win considerably. by a vote of the county board. But
Representative Peterson. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Caitlin. I understand where you're coming from, and I don't necessarily disagree on the monetary status as Representative Horton was talking about, but I guess the issue that I take umbrage to is taking the policies that we've had in the past, i.e. that the constituency has a right to vote a tax, whether it's a 6.5 cent tax, which they may have done a long time ago. Well, I shouldn't even use that as an example, but you know, typically with a half cent sales tax, which we have put on local communities, we have required from those communities that they have a referendum in order to pass it before they even bring it to the legislature. That's the first question they would ask. In this particular case, we're just saying, you know what, if the county commissioners want to do that or the county board wants to do that, they got it. So we're taking an entirely different bent policy-wise in how we tax our people from where we have been in the past. And I think we got to take pause here. I know we want to procure dollars for our transportation infrastructure, but you also have to maintain the goodwill of the people in order to do that. You have to create a trust in the government, on the government side, that says, you know, we're not just going to, by a whim of the people that are down here, start throwing taxes on you without your say-so. And so that's why I come forward with this. It puts a bit of a ring of guard around the 7-county metro. If you want to do that in 7-county metro, that's fine. But once you get outside there, then let the people start to make a decision and say, you know what, we agree. If you can sell the case, if you can sell, you're going to get, you put in 3%, you're going to get 6% back. They'll probably jump all over that. But give them the opportunity. Get their goodwill and their participation in the process to do that. I don't see it as a lose situation. I see it as a win-win. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a bit confused here. I think the A6 amendment deals with the eligible counties. I believe the A8 amendment took out the adjoining county language that was in the bill. So I think Representative Hartman was confused about which counties were talking about here. It's not an adjoining county, it's an eligible county, as my understanding is. So it's an entering, it's the first ring of county that this amendment deals with. But I'm confused then if the transit system goes out there, that the operating costs have to be covered by the county. I think what Representative Hartman said, and I'm confused by that. I'm trying to figure out this operating funding for transit.
Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morrow pointed out the language in the A8 amendment. Lines 2.17 to 2.19 define what an eligible county is. And an eligible county is adjacent to one that has opted in.
Representative Horton.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Portman clarified that. I mean, we're talking about, let's just give a practical, real-world case here, because I think I understand what Representative Severson's concerns are.
Excuse me, just a minute. Frank.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just
Representative, just going back, Representative Portman, to what you just said.
Yeah.
That is not what it is.
You're right.
An eligible county is next to the Metropolitan Transportation Area County. So Stearns County would not be one, I don't think so. I'm just not a geography major, I'm a geography minor. But so my point then is that's not an eligible county. So to say North Star going up to St. Cloud throws this in. So now, Representative Hornstein, how do we fund this? That's the question.
Exactly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is exactly what I think needs a little clarification here, and because I understand what Representative Severson's concerns are. What we have under the Joint Powers Agreement, initially, we have the 7 counties opting in, but it's designed, I think, specifically with North Star and Rushline and other corridors that extend out of the 7 counties in mind, where those adjoining counties then have the option through a vote of the county board to opt in to this joint powers agreement, which would then require no referendum. So the example is then Sherburne County is contiguous to Anoka County.
once Anoka joins, then Sherburne would have the option to join. And, you know, then I think Stearns comes after that. And basically, Representative Portman's point was very well taken that, again, I'm going to quote from the governor again twice. I mean, the state of the state, very moving. He said he wants to get the North Star line done up to St. Cloud. Well, if you support the North Star line getting done quickly up to St. Cloud, and I hope even north of there, you got to vote down this amendment, because this helps the North Star line. It helps the funding, and it expedites it. It helps operate the line, and that's really the one corridor I think that's most directly affected by this amendment. So I hope that clarifies things. And this isn't going to happen overnight. I mean, I don't think these counties are going to join like dominoes. I think hopefully they'll do it in an expedited way. But you know, you're going to have individual county board votes once our legislation is passed and signed into law. So I hope that clarifies a little about, you know, what's going on. And I think what Representative Severson is saying, you know, in his county or maybe these adjoining counties along the North Star Corridor, he would like to have this vote. And I don't want to go through the whole stadium arguments again. But just the one final comment, Mr. Chair, is that I think the economic engine, Representative Severson talked about the economic development of stadiums, and of course there's a lot of study back and forth whether they really do, you know, in the end, provide that, you know, to the extent that the stadium advocates will say. But we know without a doubt that a transit corridor, particularly a rail corridor, will provide robust economic development all along the line. We've seen that across the country. We've seen that with the Hiawatha. So this is an economic development engine, much more than a stadium. So again, I would join my colleagues who've already spoken in encouraging a no vote. But I hope that clarifies a little of how the Joint Powers Board works outside of the seven counties.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to refer to some earlier comments, perhaps a little bit less flowery than the most recent, but of Representative Hornstein, that use a specific example. We're working on a bill that should be introduced early next week, requesting $700,000 of operating funds from the legislature for the Rush Line bus service. If this bill is not enacted, that burden falls on the counties on property taxes. We heard the governor speak of today about the need to limit property taxes around the state. We can do it through an artificial means that means that that people go without services who are most in need, or we can actually be responsible and do what we've been elected to do and stand up and say we're going to provide property tax reform and relief when we can in a structural change. And this is that structural change, the sales tax dedicated to transportation projects. So the same tax results can be done today without referendum, and now we're saying that if we want to do it in a way that actually reduces property taxes, we're going to put a barrier in front of it. And that's what this amendment would do. If this amendment were enacted as law, we would be telling our county boards that they cannot find a safety valve to fund transportation projects, including transit, without going to the property taxes to do it. The $700,000 is going to be picked up on the backs of property taxes if we don't pass and enact this sales tax piece.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the debate on the issue. I think there's, you know, bringing up some good points. However, my stand on that would be if in fact the voters are going to gain by getting some relief on their property taxes, would be a primary topic for discussion before the November elections, when this could be passed in the next November elections. So I think we're cutting the people out of the pattern. The North Star isn't even supposed to be completed until 09, so this does not, there's no timeline that would preclude this. But I appreciate the discussion on this issue, and I do want to make an author's amendment on this. I've been corrected from Mr. Burris on this. In line 1.4, cross out the metropolitan, line 1.5, council to impose, cross those five words out and put in place in position of. And thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the discussion.
Seeing no more, all in favor of Amendment A6 as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No. No. Noes have it. Is there any other amendments? Members should be receiving the A7 amendment. Who, President Holbert, maybe we'll wait till people see it, folks see it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can. It's pretty simple.
Okay,
I can.
Thank you. Please.
People will recognize this language, and basically, this relates to the leased vehicle sales tax. And in the bill, it goes, I think, 50% to Greater Minnesota Transit. And this basically conforms to what the voters voted for, and that they believe that the sales tax on motor vehicles were going to be divided. 60% to the highway user fund, and then 36 and 4 is how we divided up the transit money as a result of the constitutional amendment passing to dedicate all those funds to transportation as opposed to historically part of them just going to the general fund.
Mm-hmm. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mrs. or Representative
Holbert,
right.
That's okay.
I was just looking at the rationale behind the bill language is the fact that we have no way to really put any money in real transit. That was the only way we could get it. So, yes, your amendment would take away the real transit funding and put it in highways. Where I read it, is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, basically what it does is it supports the notion that when the voters are voting to dedicate all the sales tax on vehicle sales, there's, you know, this unknown little thing that the leased vehicle sales tax is going into the general fund and not considered part of that, but I think the general public at large would support that money being used the same as sales tax on other vehicles and wouldn't differentiate between a leased vehicle versus a non-leased vehicle. But it does, the net result does leave a hole in Greater Minnesota Transit.
Representative, Mr. Chair, I remember that was the reason we used this methodology, if you want to call it methodology, because we couldn't get any general fund money into the rural transit, and we tried to keep a balanced bill, and by doing that, we thought we had a balanced bill with rural and metro transit.
Chair Leader, I know how hard it is to put these bills together, and you can put them all kinds of things and all the components and all the people knocking at your door. And yesterday, when you sat down to explain your bill, you talked about the Greater Minnesota sales tax, and that at first glance that might be a scary thing. You used the term scary thing for Greater Minnesota members. And this bill imposes a half-cent sales tax on the metropolitan taxpayers. I view that as a scary thing. And I've never, ever, ever supported setting up funding for transportation in the state on these regional levels. I think that if we're going to fund transit by sales tax, we should do it statewide. And we should have an even keel on this. We could do the rate at a far lower rate, do it statewide, because what we're doing here is we're setting up a really dangerous situation for both Greater Minnesota and the metropolitan area. And the distribution formulas, which I'll talk about after we get done with the amendments, are not going to be good for the state as a whole. In addition, if we had a lower rate of sales tax statewide, I think we might be able to get more interest, or at least turn the head of the governor in some type of compromise. But and I know I'm a little off track here of the amendment, but funding transit's always been a problem in putting these bills together. Where do you get the money for it? And I think that in looking at the bill in front of us, many of us don't think it was much of a change from what was vetoed last year. I think we're going to have to get a lot more creative in order to get a bill passed this year. I do want a bill passed this year.
I have carried bills that have had tax increases in them. But this taking the leased vehicle and throwing it to Greater Minnesota because you can't find money anywhere else to do it is not a right approach. If we are really going to do a comprehensive transportation bill, then let's do it right in a way that makes sense and is sustainable across the whole state. We got major problems with transit taxing districts, 7 county versus non-7 county. All of that would go away if we had a statewide sales tax for transit.
Representative Medor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Holberg, I told you at the realtors meeting, I'm ready to go with that. And I think Representative Hausman would also sign on as a one of the chief authors on that. We very much feel that that's the better way to solve this. But if this is the only way we could get the counties to agree, this is what we did. And by having the adjacent counties be able to join to build their transit lines, that's what we came up with. But I personally, and I think I can speak for Representative Hausman, we would very much welcome your input on that and being able to put that bill together.
Well, and Chair Morrow and Representative Medor, we're the legislature, and there's a lot of people in this room that have their own agendas, but at some point the legislature is going to have to come to some agreement, and the county might not agree with what it is, or, you know, might not get everything. We might have to make some changes, but in order to get a bill passed this year, I don't think this is the one that's going to get the votes to do an override or is going to get the governor to think twice about his position. But some of these major problems are what causes the divisions in the whole process. And at some point, we've heard from these people for years, but at some point the legislature is going to have to make the decision.
Representative Medor.
Well, again, I welcome, I think with your ability to bring your caucus together to the table on this issue, I think we should just do it. And I look for your leadership to produce that bill and bring it around. I'm more than happy to be a co-author on that. And again, I speak with, I think, Representative Hausman, who's expressed to me a number of times that she supports my position on that. You want to, let's do it. Because I think that it is a discussion we need to have. We do not have enough transit dollars going to Greater Minnesota. It's been a problem forever as I deal with the disabilities community, the aging community, the fact that they're relying more and more on property taxes. I think it's a solution that works. But again, that, you know, it's going to require bringing your members to the table to vote on a statewide tax, and I don't know how we're going to get to that. So I certainly welcome and very much, that's heartfelt. I very much would like to work with you on that.
See no other discussion? Oh, sorry, Representative Magnus. All in favor of the A7 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, please say no.
No.
The amendment does not prevail. Are there any other amendments? Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, I would like to have a discussion about how the formula distribution works and the interplay between the metro sales tax and the money going for roads and the current CASA formula, current MSA formula, and the, let me get the terminology correct, the excess sum formula. Now, we all know, those of us that have been here for a while, that the key is in the funding formulas, and for some of us in rural and suburban school districts, we can talk about the disparities in the per pupil funding and how damaging that can be to the viability of certain programs. The issue with this bill is the metropolitan sales tax, which I've just stated I don't support, will put somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.6 billion or more, depending on the flexible fund, into road funding in the metropolitan area. Now, if you look at the current formula, which this bill does not fix the structural problems with the current formula, of which there are many, in which we have Hennepin counties getting about 35% of their needs met, and now we have grandfather counties that have topped 200%, okay? Then the excess, and 50% of that base formula, which has major problems, is based on need. Then you take the excess sum formula, which is a 60-40, which I think is a 60-need-40, which is 60% need. Okay? So those formulas are overwhelmingly based on need. As the 7-county metro area collects this money for the sales tax, they will push down their need numbers. year after year after year. The net result will be less money from the state funds, the current formula and excess sum, coming into the metropolitan area. The people that are representing the metropolitan area and the negotiation table should reconsider this. The rural guys are really good at this, and in the bill, they've worked in growth factor on the tabs, the inflation, the CPI that we talked about yesterday, to guarantee that their base funding will continue to grow absent the trend in that revenue, okay? But what we are going to do, if this bill passes, is the metropolitan area will further inflame or exasperate the situation, because as we push down our need numbers by the investment in the local sales tax, then more and more of the existing fund money and the excess fund money will go to Greater Minnesota. And so, you know, there has to be a more fair way to do this. And again, I don't support the metropolitan sales tax to begin with.
Representative Wolfert, I'm going to just ask you a question. I'd asked if there are other amendments. I know you mentioned this discussion. This is the old parliamentarian in me. I think we need to have actually something before us. I might ask Representative Leader to move the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, actually the bill was moved yesterday according to the minutes, and also was moved.
As amended.
It's already been amended. It's before us then amended.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because my first question was amendment, and then you had a question for... You said you had a question, and then you...
I'm sorry. I know. I don't think I had a question. Okay. I just wanted to... my understanding is we were done with the amendments.
Okay.
But as this bill moves forward, I'm not supporting the bill in its current form for a number of reasons, but... If this body as a whole adopts this bill as it is, great for rural guys, you know, but for the metropolitan area, it is going to make a bad situation that we have now even worse.
Representative Portman.
Representative Moore, some folks have anticipated this concern and talked to the folks at MnDOT who do that allocation on the needs basis, and I'm wondering if we have somebody from MnDOT who can explain how the additional road funding from the metro area sales tax will impact the needs numbers, and if it will result in an imbalance. I think we have people from MnDOT here who can explain to us how that would work.
I think Representative Leader.
I may not fully address that, but when we're talking to 60% needs, and you're talking about metropolitan sales tax, most of that money goes to metro transit. It doesn't affect the needs. It's only 25% of that affects the needs.
Chair Leader, if they only take 25% of the sales tax raised over the 10-year period of time, it's $1.6 billion, but up to another 25% can go to roads. 50% is transit, 25 roads, and then 25 in flex fund. And so up to over $3 billion could be used to mitigate need in the metropolitan area, thereby reducing eligibility for funds out of the current formula and the excess sum formula over a period of time.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leader.
But again, Representative Holberg, at the same time they're reducing needs in the metro area, there's also happening in the rural area. They're building roads. So you have the same problem. It's probably pretty relative. The needs are structured so that it's pretty relative. The thing that you're not factoring in is your growth in vehicle registration in the metro area. That doesn't happen in the rural area. You know, when we're talking the same item, your vehicle registration is 40%, and in the metro area, that's definitely going up at a higher rate than it is in the rural area. So by the time you factor in, it's been an ongoing argument for the last 20 years on this formula thing, and I think we're really opening up the can of worms. I'm trying to say that I really feel it's relatively level. I don't know how much more you can do in it. And I agree with you, what you're saying. But by the same token, we've got most of the needs that are going to be affected in this bill are going to be reduced in the metro area on trunk highway needs. And that's, of course, a different pocket of money, because all your your major needs in bridges, the high-cost bridges, are the metro area, really. So, I mean, we've got a real problem to try and keep it in balance.
And Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair and Representative Weider, I would agree with you if there wasn't but for the factor of the sales tax being generated in the metropolitan area. So, I mean, if we're all using the same pot of money, then you would see that reduction of needs out of the same pot of money going down at the same rate. But because of the fact that the metro area is going to be pulling in hundreds of millions of dollars a year locally, of which up to half of it can be used for roads, those needs are going to go away faster in the metropolitan area. So the proportionality of unmet needs goes down much faster in the metropolitan area by virtue of the fact that we're taxing ourselves. And then what happens is that disparity gets evened out by the current formula and the excess sum formula being shifted more to greater Minnesota as a result of the local taxation in the seven-county metro area. And Mr. Donis, of course, we never saw this bill until midday yesterday, so very hard for us to prepare numbers and runs that's less than 24 hours. I will be working with him over the next week to get some runs to illustrate this and the differences between a structural change to the base formula and only changing the new money and what that means as well. But I think that the metropolitan members that are actually married to this bill, if you will, and are planning on supporting it should at least consider some of these points because we're not going to get another chance to fix this.
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, you recognize once you reduce your needs, you also get additional needs even if you built it. That's built into the system. So you blacked up a road, you get future needs. So you don't reduce them all. You've actually got a cumulative, constant buildup of needs. And that's true. If you're looking at the metro area, you should also take the needs in the rural area comparatively go. You just can't take the one out of the other. Because the system works pretty well. And if it doesn't, it could be changed. And it's an envy of the rest of the states. And I had a problem when, as you know, for many years on fighting this change in formula. But the counties agreed on it. They finally agreed on it. And they agreed on it basically because of the metro counties. And that's what the metro counties wanted. It wasn't the rural counties that established 60-40 formula.
Mr. Chair, we could go back on that, and we have testimony that says the Mica County supported that as a total package with all kinds of other funding. They recognize that it's not the best solution and it doesn't fix the structural problems in the base formula that are causing all of this. And again, 87 counties and, 12, 13, 15 Mica counties, they have to make compromise as well. But again, we are the legislature. We have both Republicans and Democrats from all areas of the state, whether it's suburbs, greater Minnesota, whatever. But if, in fact, we are going to pass the comprehensive transportation bill, shame on us. Shame on us if we pass a bill that just makes the situation worse.
Representative Fortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a metro area legislator, I think it's really important that we pass this bill because of all the unmet needs. But I also think that Representative Leader has explained very well that this isn't going to disadvantage metropolitan counties as we go forward in dividing up the gas tax revenue. But Mr. Jonas is here from MnDOT. My understanding is he's taken a preliminary look at this, and he could give us his take on how this is going to affect the look at needs. Because I certainly do not agree with the interpretation of the bill as something that's a big giveaway for greater Minnesota and puts metro counties at a disadvantage. And if I thought that it did that, I wouldn't be voting for the bill. But if Mr. Jonas, if you could just explain to us that interplay between the sales tax revenue that's spent on roads and the allocation of gas tax revenues.
Welcome, Mr. Jones. If you didn't, just say your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rick Jonas. I'm the Deputy State Aid Engineer for MnDOT. And as part of my duties, I do oversee the distribution of money between the counties that we receive and also between the cities from the state aid formulas. And as Representative Colbert is explaining to you, needs is a big portion of how the distribution of monies work. And I'm of the understanding that the sales tax portion of this bill has a number of uses that it can be applied to, and one of those uses is that county, state, highway projects can be compete for this money. Is that
are you asking me that, Mr. Jones?
I'd ask that as a question. That's my understanding.
I would turn to either Representative Leader or to Mr. Burris to respond to that. Representative Leader.
You mean, Mr. Jones, to compete for it, no, it goes to each county based on their sales tax revenues. They can just, it's a flexible fund, and that's 25% it's split. The county, within the county that gets the money determines where it goes on their system. It could be county roads, city streets, or county, state, and highways.
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chair, if I might, in the bill there's a joint powers board that distributes the funds for the metro area sales tax, of which 50% goes to transit, 25% to roads, and in the list that we were given from somebody, that we have trunk highway projects, lots of county state aid projects, there are local road projects on this list, and then 25% is a flex fund. So conceivably up to 50% of that money could go to a variety of projects, from trunk highway, state aid, to county state aid.
Representative Leader.
That's correct. But Representative Holbrook says that's correct. But it also, the money goes to the Metro Council, it's distributed back to the county. The county board makes a decision. And if they're smart as they are, they're going to spend it on their local streets and straight county system. They aren't going to spend it on county state aid highways to reduce that need. They got needs beyond way what they get. And any county board that would spend it on the county state aid system and reduce their needs when they get state aid money isn't to really understand what the situation is. They will be spending it, or should be spending it, on their local streets, their local bridges in their county system, not on the county state aid system. And I'm sure the county engineer would know that.
Mr. Jonas.
Mr. Chair, now that, with that understanding, thank you. And I think Representative Leader is also explaining things correctly. So needs is an important factor, and of course the sales tax, as explained, does have the potential then of making accomplishments on the county city highways, thereby reducing needs. That is a true thing. The needs adjustment is subject to adjustments, and oversight is provided by the county screening board, which is a makeup of county engineers, 50% of which are in the metro area, 50% are in the outstate. And they have a goal of serving the needs of the travelers of the secondary road systems, and they make adjustments to the system as necessary and as things change. There are 30,000 miles of county state aid highway out there, and right now with current levels of funding, and assuming normal rates of reconstruction of roads as they age, the rate of reinvestment in the roads is only about 50% of what it should be, and therefore the system is aging. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but we are administering an aging system right now, and that's considering the fact that right now there is $200 million of county state aid dollars being put into the construction account, and another $100 to $150 million of federal aid monies going into construction of these state aid highways. I'm not sure how much money from the sales tax would actually be spent on here, but I don't think it'll be significant in comparison with the current investments already being made. Many counties are also taking local monies in, similar to almost matching at a 50% level, the level of county state aid highways, trying to keep up with these roads and prevent this and counteract this aging effect that I described earlier. I'd like to just mention to you that as some similar examples that we have experience with, the local road improvement program and the 10-ton road system, which has received grants from the legislature in past years of $30-40 million, and they do improve roads. That may be comparable to what the final outcome of this potential thing could be. Is good construction of roads, things that people can be proud of, and I don't think it's really resulted in shifts of money significantly from one to the other. We also, though, have programs like the local bridge replacement program and our safety programs. Now, those are targeted uses of money, and they don't really reduce your needs. There's spot improvements, for example, turn lanes, where you're trying to address safety and capacity problems. Those do not reduce needs. Those may be much of the type of projects that get done with this money, as I'm understanding it.
Well, thank you. And Mr. Jones, I know I've got Representative Morgan who also has a question, so I may jump to Representative Morgan if I might.
No,
he withdraws the question.
Okay. I just had one final point here.
Jonas.
It would seem to me, as described about how this money would be administered and the project be chosen, that if it amounted to a significant investment on the local roads and it really did have local discretion on how the money might be used, as Representative Leader described, that it could very well be eligible for the local credit adjustment within the system and therefore having a net effect of zero on the needs formula.
Thank you, Mr. Jonas. Is there further discussion on House File 2800 as amended? Representative Holberg.
I'd just like a roll call vote, please.
Roll call has been requested.
Okay.
This is, yes, Representative Hornstein.
Before we vote, Mr. Chair, I wanted to thank Representative Leader for all of his hard work on this bill, and we have so many wonderful advocates here with us tonight, and I wanted to thank them as well. This is a really excellent bill that moves our state forward, and as Representative Leader said yesterday, addresses roads and transit, rural, urban, suburban, and I strongly encourage yes vote from this committee. Let's move this bill out and get it to the floor as soon as possible. So thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to debate one of my favorite issues, the Joint Powers Board, and participate in that. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Though I agreed with a number of points that Representative Holbrook made, there was one she made that I thought, in fairness to all of the community, that I should weigh in on, and that is clearly legislators alone have not been able to pass a bill. A transportation bill. We have tried for a number of years, and it is only because the whole state, advocacy groups literally from everywhere, who have just become part of a legislative partnership that we are staying at this point. And I think, in fairness to all the work happening all over the state on the bill, I think we have to acknowledge in this case it's not legislators alone who are getting this done.
Representative Leader renews his motion to pass House File 2800 as amended to capital investment. Take the roll, please. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Magnus. I apologize.
I
looked over and didn't see your hand.
I'm sorry. I guess I have to say something about the bill. I, too, want to echo the work that all of you have done on the majority side on the bill. Especially my friend, Representative Leader. It's not easy to put a bill together, is it, Bernie? No, and we're seeing that today. And this is going on the fast track. And obviously, a lot of us, including myself, have got questions about the bill, and especially some of the financial side. And luckily, it's got several other stops to make before it gets finished. I think Representative Leader, there's some good things in the bill, and I think some of them are an improvement over what we've had in the years I've been on the Transportation Committee. In fact, there's quite a few good things that I think are good. Unfortunately, there's some things I don't think are as good. And again, I know it's difficult to put the bill together, and we saw today and tonight with the discussions we've had. Some of the folks are still. I know I'm questioning it in my mind. Just what goes on. The A8 amendment that the committee did pass that you brought forth, helped the bill out. Unfortunately, none of the amendments that our caucus brought forth passed. I think some of them would have helped the bill too. But maybe we can continue down that road as it takes the, you know, the bill takes its road. Again, I think you have portions of the bill that are pretty good and some that are not as good. I will hope that through the process we go through that that we can continue to make progress on the areas that that probably aren't as good. The governor's made his voice clear. What happens with that, who knows? We need a transportation bill done. Let's work to continue to do that. I know we've got an enthusiastic group here, and that enthusiasm is good. Number one, we've got a committee here that is that actually likes each other, and that's positive too. We've kept that up for the last year or so, knowing that we've got a lot of work to do. And I'm afraid our work is not done, but I'll continue to work with you, and we've developed a good relationship, Representative Chairman Leader. And you and I have been to a lot of transportation meetings in the last few months here, and I think a lot of them were not as fun as we would like to have seen them. But my hope is that we continue to work together and see if we can get something done, and you know, improve this bill. Maybe we can get it done and passed. If not, continue to work towards the goal of getting a good comprehensive plan done.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm going to disagree a little bit with my colleague over here on Representative Magnus, but this isn't the best bill we could have gotten. I think this bill goes far short of dealing with all the needs that we have in the state of Minnesota for transportation. But it gets that $600 million worth of bonding. They'll get fracture critical bridges, just about every fracture critical bridge out there, fixed in the next 2 to 3 years, or money can go for that. And it's also about getting jobs and getting people to work. We've heard from different committees and different people the number of construction workers currently out of work in the state of Minnesota. This will help to get some of those people back to work and paying into our tax system and paying into the state of Minnesota and contributing. It'll also help to get people to work into jobs, help companies and businesses get their goods to market. So I think this is a good bill. It's a good start. It doesn't go anywhere near what we need to do, but it's a good start to get going, and I think we should get this bill passed and get it moving on.
Representative Leader.
Thank you. I don't want to belabor it either, but I think everyone in here is concerned about passing a transportation bill on a good bill. And Representative Holberg and I work together, and we aren't mad at each other. At least I'm sure of that. But she makes a point, and it's a point which we've had for many years. And the real problem is it's difficult to understand what we call our formula system and the state aid system. The one thing is, Mr. Jonas pointed out, there's the county screening board. Right now, the balance is with 50 metro. We need certain, and they go through it and they make adjustments, and that's something we all don't know. So there's a pretty good oversight thing, and I really appreciate that. I want to definitely say it isn't because of what we did here putting bill together. It's been basically all of the outside of the metro legislature that comes, the advocate groups, and you know you can't make them all happy. But at least you look at what they have and you try to fit it in what we can do. The one thing I'd like to point out is the fact that in the bill, I think I have to be cautious that you understand what I said. We have $600 million in bonding. That doesn't mean MnDOT's going to do that. The money is there that they can do that. That would take care of all the fracture critical bridges. So that doesn't mean tomorrow they're going to... MnDOT makes those decisions. We don't make any, we haven't made any, identified any projects in this bill, and it's a good thing to know, because there are factors that have to be considered other than what are political, and I have never questioned MnDOT's rationale why they do it, or their commissioner in that respect, because there are factors which we don't know, and we have to be cautious on that. I just don't want to be saying that Bernie said they're going to build those bridges, but the capability is there to fund those particular bridges or projects. And again, it's not because of what we've done here, but pretty much because of Representative Housing said, it's the groups outside and the public that's really been putting pressure on it, and there's a lot of pressure on it. So I certainly appreciate all of this, the work that all of you people put up with. And the good thing about it, it's good to have the debate. Sometimes you have to get in the debate to come with the right answers. But again, thank you very much.
Well, Representative Leader, I want to thank you for a balanced bill and for the experience of sitting with a big state map and you and I trying to find all these bridges, and the bridges need to get done. So you're right, $600 million in bridges in the first 2 years, and I want to thank you for showing me how this is a balanced bill.
Beard?
No.
Doty?
Aye.
Hausman?
Yes.
Holberg?
No.
Ornstein?
Aye.
Bartman?
Yes.
Kalin?
Aye.
Mador?
Yes.
Magnus?
No.
Mason?
Yes.
Morgan?
Aye.
Morrow?
Aye.
Nelson?
Yes.
Ruth?
No.
Severson?
No.
Slocum?
Yes.
You forgot me.
Leader.
Hi.
Leader.
I think you forgot me. I didn't hear it.
The bill passes as amended. We'll move to capital investment.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'll take the count, please. Wait a second. Get the count here a second. There being 12 ayes and 5 noes, the bill passes as amended. We'll go to capital investment. There will be no committee meeting tomorrow. Our next meeting will be February 19th, Tuesday, February 19th, 4 o'clock in room 10. Meeting is adjourned. Oh, wait a second.